It's time we started standing up to all of these mandates. You remember when the government told us, when Tony Fauci told us that we were going to lock down, he said it was for 2 weeks. And now it's been almost 2 years. And I'm going to tell you three things that you need to remember in this critical day and age. One is that once government acquires a power, it never lets it go voluntarily. The second thing that we need to know is that every power that government acquires, using this pandemic as a pretense, it will ultimately abuse to the maximum effect possible. And this is just a rule that is as certain as gravity. The third thing that you need to know is that nobody has ever complied their way out of totalitarianism. Every time you comply, the demands will get greater and greater. We need to resolve that here and now, this is the hill that we need to die on. They have come for our jobs. They've come for our transport. Now they're coming for our children. And we have an obligation as parents to protect them. There has never been a government in history that has told its people, we are going to demand that children sacrifice themselves and take risks to save old people. It's always the other way around. The old, the mature, the adults always put themselves at risk to protect their children. This is an ethical issue. It's a moral issue. It's an issue of character for each of us. And it's an issue about the preservation of democracy and public health. We all need to stand up now and do everything that we can to block these power plays by authoritarian powers that are trying to steal from us the health of our children.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Saturday, January 1st, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. And it just so happens to be back in the original location for the beginning of the year. Unfortunately, it wasn't by choice. Those that may be paying attention out there to the weather may be noticing that we are seemingly just endlessly being battered with tornadoes in a place that never seems to get them. Not really implying anything other than I hate being in a location where tornadoes are constant, but that's something that's happening right now. So if we tend to lose power or something happens during the show, don't worry. I'm most likely okay. It's likely some internet outages. I had to leave the office because of the power outages and on and on and on. But we have an outstanding show planned for you today. A lot of important stuff to get to. The beginning of the year, really positive outlook this year. Standing on how much how much change was affected, essentially, by the work of those in this chat, on this channel, on this platform, in the independent media. It's inspiring. I mean, it really is inspiring to stand back and look, and it's almost impossible not to see the effect that what they're deeming conspiracy theorists had on everything. And what's even more hysterical about all that is the ones they're calling conspiracy theorists are the ones that have clearly turned out to be correct. And now they're going, oh, well, they just guessed and got lucky. That's not smart. That's still irrational. We'll get to that as well. You know, peer-reviewed science review is definitely guessing in their context today, but all the information we've been giving you has very clearly led to objectivity, has led to you being able to make your own choices. And that's really what this all comes down to. So today we are going to be going through a lot of important information, including, as always, the illusion breaking down in front of you, the pandemic of the injected becoming more clear than ever today. But some really interesting things to start with today, specifically around the rationalization of authoritarianism from the very people that have been screaming that we're all going to be overtaken by authoritarianism, except only on Trump's side, though, right? And that's not to be taken in a partisan context. All of you know this show knows should never be taken that way, but rather just how you can see these tools being used back and forth within the two-party illusion. But rather that one side aggressively today acting like the other is authoritarianism and now back and forth, it seems. Interestingly, it is happening back and forth now. Well, they're actually arguing that the authoritarianism is necessary, but to fight climate change in the context of the biggest pandemic in a century, which doesn't really make sense, except that you can see they're piecing these things together in a really clumsy way. But they're rationalizing the idea of removing your rights for the greater good. Now, where did we hear that in the past? Well, not even in the past, like yesterday or today or very recently, the Great Reset. Everything about it is under that same context. They're also talking about that in regard to bio enhancement, which I've shown you before, and I'll make that connection as we start today. And we're also going to talk about Omicron, the lack of risk that it seems to be there. As we've been telling you from the moment this began, from Botswana, South Africa, even though now it's becoming a, you know, kind of a commonplace discussion to prove that Omicron's not more dangerous. Well, you knew that months ago, or rather a month or more ago, if you've been watching this channel. Because we're ahead of that narrative, even the the quasi mainstream independent, where we've been very clearly ahead of most everything that's been happening here. Not because we are guessing, as the media would try to frame, not because we are doing anything other than piecing together previous actions. And I give all the credit to someone like James Corbett. As you know, his work has been something I try to emulate, and that's what he would do, and that's what he does do. We look at the information. We take estimations based on what we think they've done. We look at what they're currently planning. We look at what they tell you they're doing, and we put it together. We give you our opinions. And what do you know? Turns out to be right quite frequently. That's not just TLAB. That's the independent media in a large way. Very powerful. But the idea that this is not very dangerous and what they're doing behind that. And now the idea that, guess what? Fourth boosters, fifth boosters, even the sixth booster is already on its way. It's already in front of you right now, as they already still pretend that just get that second one and you're going to be good. And then, oh, you got the second one, get the third one and you'll be good. Oh, but you got the third one, fourth, and then you'll be square. Okay, when does that actually end? I think it's pretty obvious to see that never ends. But we'll get into that discussion, as well as the reality that there's new variants popping up already. New variants of concern that are already happening, but they're not going to talk about it just yet because they're still really squeezing out the fear from this new current situation and the data that shows that even the fourth or the fifth or any booster going forward wanes, stops working for the most part after like 2 months exactly into the third month. Yet again, that third month connection that we've been trying to get people to see for quite a long time. And then an interesting discussion about the post and pre licensure safety data from the FDA. And a few other important conversations to finish it out. But one of the ones you'll really want to hear about, which you may not have heard about yet, which we were going to talk about yesterday, but some other things happened, and that is Flurona. Yeah, that's a thing now. Flurona. What about Delmicron? Yeah, you haven't heard about these things. They're actually being discussed. And it's, as of today, breaking in the Western mainstream media, despite the fact that it's been talked about in India for quite a while. And that's the combination of flu, coronavirus, or Delta and Omicron. And we'll get into all of that. It's just the most ridiculous discussion I think I've ever seen. And you'll understand why as we get into it, because of the way they're trying to drive it in, the fear mongering around the whole thing. Now, to start off, I actually wanted to make a quick note and see if this is not working or is or isn't working on Super U at the moment. So I hope it is looking like, I just want to check. It doesn't look like the embed is working, guys. I apologize for that. If you're trying to get to Super U, just make sure you go to directly to our... I used to have a link right up here for those that weren't able to, but unfortunately, it looks like the embeds aren't working. So just go directly there if you'd like to use that website. I hope it's working there. If not, go to Odyssey or anywhere else. We're always in a lot of different platforms. Unfortunately, the only two sites out there that have embeds before I go live is YouTube and Super U. Sadly, that means YouTube ends up being the one right there, which really bugs me. But go anywhere else. BitChute, Odyssey, Rockfin, they're all streaming live right now. Super U will get the bugs worked out. Still going to get there. Now, going forward, foreign policy to start off. Just a couple rattle off articles that I want you to hear that Robert just recently put up. Israel weighs a new attack on Gaza, allowing Hisham Abu Hawash to die on hunger strike. This is a political prisoner who's I think 130 something days he's been on a hunger strike. Good. It does look like Super U is working, so please go there. Unfortunately, the embed is not. Weighing new strikes on Gaza in the middle of the biggest pandemic in a century, we keep being told. But why is that acceptable to bomb place while they're supposedly suffering a pandemic. Well, that's what we're using to argue other things shouldn't happen because, well, God forbid, they're in a pandemic. We can't do that. We can't do this. But we'll keep attacking these people over here because that works for our agenda. Regardless of the fact, this is constantly, obviously a war crime, a constant. It's an occupied location. Therefore, any attacks are a war crime. They're allowed armed rebellion. This is up Geneva Conventions, United Nations. That puts this whole conversation to rest, no matter where you think the truth lies. And it continues because your government doesn't care. And it's disgusting. So Robert will be keeping up on the story because it seems like this is kind of a currently developing story about what may happen. And they may be seeking out an escalation intentionally, which is not new. Next one, Lebanon's Western-backed fascists seek civil war at all costs. Yet just same old story, regime change, Western puppet put in place, manipulating the forces, ultimately driving exactly what they keep using. What's funny how we keep seeing around the world, the fascists and authoritarians that they pretend they don't want to be like are all the people put there by the governments telling you they're fighting fascism and authoritarianism. Isn't that funny? Sort of how like the United Arab Emirates that's working directly with the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab to drive in the Great Reset as the key partner, the first and key partner, the UAE, is one of the most obvious human rights violating countries out there. Working for equity and equality as they don't give that to their own people, that seems like it makes a lot of sense, or not at all. I'll have a point on them in a second. Now, next one, 377,000 Yemenis dead as Biden goes back on a promise to end the war. Now, this is the estimate from the United Nations. I promise you it's way more than that, because I've been covering this story for a long time. But the reality is that they're just continuing the same war that they criticized Trump for, and it's just more of the same, more of the, you know, telling you whatever they want, what they think you need to hear in order to get the agenda through, and then going on to do whatever they want anyway. Again, biggest pandemic in a century, they claim, which is not actually what's happening, but then they continue to allow the Saudis to bomb and murder and starve all these people because that's for freedom, right? Of course, that's the same narrative as always. But don't forget, Saudi Arabia, the government especially, is so wildly incompetent that the U.S. government needs to be directly involved, otherwise it would fall apart tomorrow. And on that note, an airstrike led by the Saudi coalition, which is completely driven and led by the United States government and the Israeli government, has mistakenly hit a camp of their own allied Yemeni pro-government forces, killing at least 15 people. So not only are they murdering innocent civilians, but they're also accidentally, clumsily murdering their own people. But just let it keep going. Right? Because who cares? Because Yemen's so far away that we don't care. And I heard another story from some other group. So let's forget it's ever happening. This is just the ongoing foreign policy reality that Americans pretend that, you know, they don't really want to digest. I shouldn't say it like that because I know most of you in this chat who are Americans are well aware. The sad reality is this is being done with your tax dollars and it still continues. Now, on a more domestic note, as I mentioned briefly the other day, federal prosecutors quietly dropped the case against Jeffrey Epstein's jail guards in the middle of the Maxwell trial, even though it's obvious this is something that should have been at the very least charged. These people were very clearly incompetent, malfeasant, or part of some very large criminal action. And they just dropped the case? Yeah, certainly makes sense, doesn't it? They made the decision on December 13th, though, in the middle of the trial, and then weirdly waited until the 30th to do it and hoped nobody paid attention. It's just ridiculous. This is an ongoing circus of the absurd. How in the world are you dropping this? It's because they want this to go away. Either way, none of this is resolved, even remotely, because let's say every single one of these people were actually held accountable. Are we really going to pretend this massive international sex trafficking network was ran by these two people alone? Come on. That's how dumb they want you to be. You're not that dumb. And we all see that. This is a massive network. This is one person. She was one operative. He was one operative. That's how this works. And they just hope you're that stupid to go, there it is, put it to bed. Oh, let those two guards go back to their jobs because we'll use them again in the future, I'm sure. Now, finally, on a note, a great article from Derek Bros. Is there room for optimism in 2022? Really good article. Now, by the way, for those that read this, and it really wasn't, I was personally touched by all the focus on TLAV and how well that we've been doing. I want to just make sure you know that I did not ask Derek to write this as the editor. I thought people might be thinking that because it was a lot of discussion about my previous interviews and so on. As many of you know how I run this platform in general, I allow the writers to just write about in general what they think is most important. You know, a lot of editors tend to kind of try to derive it in a way that they think makes the most sense. I prefer to let the writers out there that are talented seek out and discuss and write about what they think is important. Because isn't that what makes sense? They're the talented ones, right? That's how this should work. Anyway, the point is, I thought this was fantastic. And I was really just touched by all the focus on not just my work, but the entirety of The Last American Vagabond. Really pointing out how people like Taylor Hudak and Robert Inlakesh and Whitney Webb and Derek himself have done such outstanding work, not just on COVID-19, but just around this entire year on so many important topics. And in fact, as he points out, been light years ahead of a lot of other work out there. Really great discussion. I hope you will read it, because the point is, guys, there is a lot of room for optimism here. And this is the whole Darkest Before the Dawn argument that I make all the time. That we need to realize that the reason that this is becoming so incredibly overwhelming is because we're reaching people. This is what's happening. We are reaching, and you are reaching people, and they're desperate to stop that. If, again, as all the old adage, I think is the right word to use right there. If they didn't care, if you weren't making a difference, they don't care what you're doing. They can, like, imagine that guy with the sign out in the middle of the street screaming, you know, tomorrow's the end, or aliens are coming, or whatever. It's the point being, if even if, just despite whether you think one or the both of those things are real, the point is that it's addressed as crazy. Nobody even looks twice at it. The government doesn't come arrest the guy because nobody cares, because it's not making a difference. However, when you come out and show peer-reviewed science or show one of our shows discussing that and it reaches somebody, that's why we get censored. That's why they're going after people that aren't doing what they're told, because this is important to them and you are making a difference. I just can't make that any more clear. So really read this and digest the information, because it's important to see not just that we can, but that we are making a difference, and referencing Derek's The Greater Reset and how we can actually come together and make actual solution-driven choices. Now, I played that clip in the beginning, and I don't know why it cut off this. Damn sure I left that clip in there so you could see it. But at the end, is this was the point. Join us in fighting the mandates in 2022, childrenshealthdefense.org. Great opening clip by RFK Jr. telling you some of the things he said in previous interviews, but in a very concise way, that we cannot allow this, because it never before in history has there been a situation where a government takes this kind of power and then just gives it back. It does not happen. And we are watching this happen again, just like with the Patriot Act, just like with many different situations of the past. And it is time to stand up and recognize we can stop it if we want to. It's up to you. The choice is yours. Now, to start with a really, I mean, this is just almost kind of a humorous thing to start with, but it's going to make you drop out of your chair how ridiculous this is. This is as of December 29th. Starting with the idea of, you know, rationalizing authoritarianism as long as it goes in the direction that they like. But in this, to start, is another, before we get to those more specific points, an article that's trying to like lay cover for what is literally happening in these countries right now, in the UK and the United States and everywhere. But here's The Guardian. Guess what? Eastern European countries apparently are adopting authoritarian measures in the face of COVID. No. Only those ones over there, though. I mean, seriously, Guardian? I mean, this is, I try to imagine Zala Sesko writing this and just going, how could you even get through this without laughing out loud? Like with a serious face on. I mean, this is so ridiculous to pretend like this isn't happening, at the very least, everywhere. I guess that doesn't even make sense to say it that way, but like it's happening all over the place. I guess the finer point was that it's clearly happening in the Western countries. But analysis reveals widespread violations of international democratic freedoms in response to pandemic. Yeah, you don't say. You mean like every country you could possibly look at right now that is towing this line? But what's funny is they only want to point to kind of the ones that are towing the line, but not necessarily entirely when it comes to foreign policy. You know, so you have the other countries out there that are going along with certain things, but aren't necessarily going along with the larger agenda, and they aren't part of the club. Whereas you have countries like this, you know, that are very clearly doing all the COVID restrictions and so on, but yet they're calling them out in this way. Like, you're doing those terrible anti-democratic things that we're also doing, but we're going to point at you because we want to apply pressure to you so you do other things we want. It's exactly like everything else we've seen before COVID and through COVID, such as leaning on groups like Belarus to say, you have to do all this stuff or we won't give you this IMF money, or we'll threaten your lives, or we'll do plenty of other things we've seen unless you toe the line of the COVID narrative. Well, here it says Europe's political approach to the coronavirus pandemic has divided down stark east-west lines. I mean, I just can't even... the idea that it's that much more severe in certain locations in the Eastern European area when compared to places like, I don't know, Australia, is just laughable. Yes, it's extreme, but it's also extreme all over the place. There's some of the most extreme places you can find right in the United States. 5 of 18 Eastern European countries have registered major violations of international democratic freedom since March 2020. Right. And you know who hasn't done any? The U.S. government, the U.K. Is that because they haven't actually violated democratic freedom? No, it's because they just don't look at it that way. They'll frame it as, well, yes, we did this crazy restriction from your international rights, but that's because danger. And we all agree danger. Therefore, it's not actually a violation. But they are doing the same thing. And that is a violation because it's not the same day or whatever their rational. I can't even make a logical argument there. They're saying COVID is dangerous, so we're going to do these things that restrict your democratic freedoms. And they go, oh, foul, can't do that. Please explain for me how that's not literally what's happening right now in the Western countries. And it says that this is according to the research conducted by Varieties of Democracy, or VDEM Institute, compared with none of 12 Western European countries. Seriously? This is The Guardian, and this author specifically trying to argue that none of these Western European countries are in any way violating democratic freedoms. The simple idea of stopping free movement, or the idea that you have to have a vaccine to do anything, or have to prove anything to get on a bus or a plane, that's the same thing. The research also shows that Eastern European countries have been more likely to turn to abusive enforcement. You don't say. You mean like using police to enforce mandates that aren't actually law, or physically force masks on people's faces, or drag people by the hair into, yep, we've seen all of those in all these Western countries. But only the European ones are the bad guys. The Eastern ones, though, likely to turn to abusive enforcement, disinformation, and discriminatory measures. You mean like taking a measure in like New York, let's say, that applies to the vast majority of the African-American population alone? That doesn't count, though, because we didn't mean to do that, so they say, with the most common violation being restrictions on the media. Yes, exactly. Oh, but the independent media doesn't apply. It's only the ones that we allow to be media and say are media and then directly influence what they can say. We don't censor them because they say what we're supposed to tell them or what they're supposed to say. This is just comical. It really is that bad. And I wonder who actually out there believes this. Like, I don't even think people who agree with their narrative read this and go, yep. I think they go, yeah, that works for the narrative, but we all know that's not true. It's obvious this is happening in every possible facet of this discussion. Common violations being all across the West. Very clear disinformation, discriminatory measures, censorship of the media, abusive enforcement. They just all agree that we're doing it for the right reasons. That's all it is. It's subjective. It's sort of how murdering people in Yemen is freedom. And when, you know, Soleimani, let's say, helps defend the illegal invasion of a country and therefore in the process is in battle with American soldiers or Western soldiers, they claim that that is killing Americans when they're the ones illegally invading, right? It's just all framing. That's all it ultimately comes down to. The worst violations were observed in Serbia, which recorded a violations score three times higher than the European average. And who's doing the scoring? And what's the metrics, right? Under a special regime implemented in a declared state of emergency, right? You mean that's not happening over here? A special regime implemented in a declared state of emergency. Refugees, migrants, and asylum seekers were selectively targeted and put under a strict 24-hour quarantine control by the military. That's their metric. They'll go, oh, look at that. That's crazy. You could point to... I can't even keep count of what Western countries are doing that exact same thing with refugees from Mexico or any other thing we're talking about and quarantine them. Yes. And even forced vaccinations on them. Yep. This is willfully ignorant. They were banned from leaving the centers while support staff were preventing from entering. Is that Australia? Is that the United States? Is that the UK? Gee, I don't know. It sounds exactly like everywhere else. Belgium was the only Western European country where moderate misconduct occurred. That's actually what they're saying. Belgium was the only one where moderate misconduct. So UK, France, all of them, totally good. Upholding democracy, they claim. The country recorded ethnic profiling during the pandemic. Right. And that's Belgium's bad because they did ethnic profiling. according to the VDEM Institute, with abusive police practices disproportionately affecting minority ethnic communities. But only Belgium, though. Good God. Like, again, I just can't picture the writer. Like, she must be embarrassed with herself. Or doesn't care, and she's a sociopath. I mean, it's just somebody out there is going, this is really bad, but let's pump it out there because we got to say it. Experts say such actions all often follow COVID measures set by the government and do not have a clear basis in the rule of law. Yes. And just tattoo that on the foreheads of all the Western leaders. So that's bad when we point to it over there, but we do the same thing and it's all good because danger, fear, narrative. Dr. Joel Grogan, a senior lecturer in law at Middlesex University, found that experts from 24 out of 27 EU countries reported at least some concern regarding restrictive measures falling outside the legal powers of the government. However, and this is the great part, and this is where you get into why even their own article pointing out the dangers and saying it's not happening here, at the same time, quietly argues why, even if it does happen here, it's for a good reason, though, because we're fighting for freedom. Same thing. I'm not even making this up. However, even if, quote, nearly all countries struggle with balancing the rule of law with the intense pressure to act in an emergency, she said this did not mean we should equally concerned about all the countries. I mean, Grogan, Dr. Joel Grogan, is a liar. Or very clearly dishonest. Somebody who can stare at this situation and be like, okay, here's a Western country literally violating the rights of their people. Here's a Eastern country literally violating the rights of its people. But the Eastern country, bad guys. So therefore, they're doing the bad thing. But over here, no. We shouldn't be as concerned with them. Right? Because they're balancing it just right. It's just completely subjective and it makes my brain hurt. They just spent 16 paragraphs screaming at you about why this is so bad. And then they go, wait, though, even if we get to a point, which we're already at, and they know that, where all the countries find themselves in this precarious situation with the law, which is already happening. She said we shouldn't be as equally concerned because good guy countries. That's what that means. The Guardian analysis also revealed how some East Central European governments with a history of undermining democratic principles, so have all of them, have exploited the pandemic to further spread anti-democratic practices. Yes, exactly. Like an authoritarian technocratic future? Yeah, exactly like that. Quote, since the government came to power, it has used COVID-19 as a pretext to try to pass measures which affect basic human rights. Yeah, they're not talking about the US or, as you might have been thinking right there. Nope, they're still pointing over there to the bad guy countries because that's totally not happening here. This is just so ridiculous. For Grogan, the risk lies in democratic infringements in the name of emergency response becoming normalized. Yeah, he's still pointing at Eastern countries. Not us, because that's not happening here. Quote, the risk of normalizing emergency is that ordinary expectations of what rights can exercise without conditions are forgotten, and what decisions government should only make with permission are ignored. We can say we have a democracy, but not live in one. Doesn't that just make you sick? He's talking about other countries while standing in a country doing that, literally in this moment. There is hope, he says. However, since she argues authoritarianism fundamentally relies on public support. Yeah, and that's true, by the way, in my opinion. For ordinary people, protest, objection, and education are the best resistance against anti-democratic trends. Yes, they're talking like, you guys over there in Serbia, you should be doing this. She is actually talking to you, whether she realizes it or not. You have to let this happen before it can happen. Just like Corbett said, this will end when you end it. So for ordinary people in the UK, in France, in anywhere else you're talking about, the United States, protest, object, educate. Those are the best resistances against what's happening right now, because we can fight back if we become aware that we are not the minority. But gosh, that's crazy. Only those Eastern European bad guys. Oh man, and they're doing all kind of bad things in COVID. But here we do the same things for freedom. Don't think twice about it. And here's the UAE reference I made a moment ago. As you'll see, the United Arab Emirates. Arab Emirates bans unvaccinated citizens from leaving the country. Interesting how that works. Remember all the silly jokes about how countries, walls or whatever else about how stopping you from leaving. And they're like, you're so silly. Well, suddenly these things seem to make sense. Thank God that wall didn't get fully built, right? Imagine what would happen there. I'm kind of being facetious. The idea is ultimately that those things can be used both ways. And we need to think about that. But as I said, the United Arab Emirates Don't forget the leading partner on the Great Reset being pushed under the guise of equity and equality just irrationally restricted the movements of only those who refuse to take an experimental unapproved medical intervention. Please see what that foreshadows for your future. I don't care whether you think it's justified or not. This is a government that is literally involved, leading, in fact, the secondary leading partner for the Great Reset beside Klaus Schwab, driving in what they claim is equity and equality. And they just said, well, you didn't make this choice, therefore you're now restricted specifically because you did not take a medical intervention that we're forcing on people. If you don't think that applies to where this Great Reset is going, the Build Back Better scenario with the 5G smart city, Internet of Things, Internet of Bodies, implantables, all of the different things that they're openly telling you is a part of the fourth industrial revolution, then you are not listening. They're telling you this is what's going to happen. It's going to be part of this future that you're going to be able to be banned, excluded from whatever it is. If you don't do whatever they're saying you have to do, that's your future. And if you don't think that's happening, you're not looking. It's happening right in front of you, and they're using the threat of a pandemic to get you to go along with it. Parasite stress theory, as always. Now, here is the next part of this, the next logical step. And this, there's two steps here I'm taking that kind of take us out on a limb early in the show just to get the connection in people's minds, right? So we're right now rationalizing the idea of, I mean, even in this, in a way, saying, you know, authoritarianism is happening and we don't really agree, but then we make this big call at the end for why it's not necessarily bad as long as you're doing it the right way, right? And building the Great Reset under the guise of doing all this. But see, the next step here is climate change, or what they're telling you it is, and how they're rationalizing the very idea of authoritarianism from the same argument, the same side, who is right now pointing at Republicans and Trump and, you know, vanilla ISIS and whatever else they're trying to jam in this idea to argue that authoritarianism and Nazis and all fascism is all coming for you, in coming for our democracy. And then out of the other side of their mouth, arguing why we need authoritarianism because climate change is going to kill us all. That's what hypocrites look like. As Alexander wrote, this is where I saw it first, a prestigious journal in political science, in the journal, the American Political Science Review, has published a disturbing piece of political theory. In my right reading, it explicitly argues that we must put climate action over democracy and adopt authoritarian governance if democracies fail to act on climate change. Okay, so the absurd argument, and it's not for Alexander because he's saying this is crazy, their absurd argument right on just in this little synopsis is you're basically saying we don't even care about democracy. So if the point is, if we leave it to democracies to come to their own decisions, and if they don't make the right decision, we're going to step in and do it ourselves. This is the exact, this is an analogy, I guess, or a microcosm of the larger problem for every other thing we're talking about. It's the same as the injection. It's a choice. Go ahead. We'll give you a choice because you're a free human being. Take the injection to save your life and save everyone else's life, they say. And you say no, and they go, well, we'll come back tomorrow. A week later, 2 years later, do you take it yet? Well, you don't. We're going to restrict you. We're going to stop this. We're going to take your job. We're going to restrict everything in your life. But it's still a choice, though, right? Just like they keep saying, we gave them the pretend choice to let them think they had a choice. Give them that little fake steering wheel in the back of the car for the baby, make you think you're driving. And then the moment you don't do what we wanted, we just swing in and do what we wanted anyway. Same thing. If you're going to pretend that you're going to let them choose for themselves, but if they choose wrong, we're going to make it happen anyway, then you don't actually believe in it. Democracy was an illusion to get you to think that you were actually in charge. That's, in fact, what I truly believe democracy even is. Mob rule. It's the manipulated mob that does everything, and then it's simply just the people who manipulate the mob that are in control. And that is a science today. So they're arguing authoritarianism is the right step because you're too dumb to know what to do next. This is from December 6, 2021. Political legitimacy, authoritarianism, and climate change. It says, is authoritarian power ever legitimate? I just love the way it starts. Right? Because, of course, if you bring up the idea of just Nazis or anything else, they want to point, oh, there's no air for that guy. It's wrong, bad, all bad. Like, I mean, the idea is that they're... are people out there that disagree, let's say. But to them, that's just unacceptable, except when they open the conversation to an area where they think it makes sense. Now, it was crazy up until they find something that works for them. This means they don't have integrity. They don't have anything other than what makes sense for them, what works for what they want to accomplish. This is politics. It's politicians. It's hypocrisy. Either you don't agree with authoritarianism or you do, right? You can't just find some wiggle room in there and be like, well, it works when I like it to work. It works when it works for what I think works. The contemporary political theory literature, which largely conceptualizes legitimacy in terms of democracy or basic rights, would seem to suggest not that authoritarianism is never legitimate. He says, I argue, however, that there exists another overlooked aspect of legitimacy concerning a government's ability to ensure safety and security. See, this is the same argument Thomas Jefferson. And I can't remember if I'm remembering the wrong person all of a sudden, but the classic argument, the classic quote, right? Those that would give up safety and security for a little temporary, or what is it? Safety. Now, see, I'm going to look it up now. Now that I got it all confused in my head. Safety. Oops, I misspelled that. Here we go. But just to get it right. Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety. That's actually, I think that's even truncated, to be honest. But whatever, it gets the point across. That's why I hate when I see that and it's in quotes, because I don't think that's actually the official quote. Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's shortened, but it's the gist of it. Right? So the point is the same. That he's saying, well, to ensure that safety, that we need to remove a little bit of your rights, right? Because that's what it would mean, authoritarianism, democracy and rights. And that's the idea. And this is where you get into collectivism, that we need to make sure that's good for everybody or it's good for no one. And that's not right. That's not actually human rights. That's not actually bioethics or any of it. The UNESCO and everybody else around the world, U.S. law, international law, the individual's rights outweigh the rights or the discussion of society and science as a whole. That's what the international law around this conversation has always said, and it still says that today. But here they argue, for those things, we need to remove your rights. And he says, while under normal conditions, and again, that becomes whatever they want to make it in, right? So normally it's all good, but because pandemic, or because terrorism, or because racism, or because climate change, you see what I mean? You insert narrative there, and you could say, well, normally we would do this, but here is a special circumstance. An emergency, let's call it, right? And that's why we've been in a forever state of emergency ever since 9/11. And that's how they make this stuff work. But normally, though, maintaining democracy and rights is typically compatible with guaranteed safety. Typically, right? As if it's just some flight of fancy. Well, you know, typically it works. Except they've been arguing there's no room for discussion up until they see a room for authoritarianism that works for what they like. In emergency situations, he says, conflicts between these two aspects of legitimacy can and often do arise. And this is where you have integrity, right? Where you have consistency, where you stand by what you believe in when it gets tough. What they're saying is, well, it gets tough, so let's just switch to authoritarianism until we get past this. A salient example of this is the COVID-19 pandemic, during which severe limitations on free movement and association have become legitimate techniques of government. Excuse me? You see how this frames? This guy is making this argument. Cambridge University. And actually saying that it's become a foregone conclusion that lockdowns, masks, restrictions, forced mandates, they've worked. That's a foregone conclusion in the minds of people on this side of the argument. That's ridiculously not true. The data doesn't back that up. The real world examples don't back that up. Literally everything you point to does not back that up, other than them saying that it backs it up. And that's what they're doing. The media is running with that. Lockdowns work, so let's keep doing it. Also for climate change, right? We haven't gotten past that yet. That's actually what their stance is. Even though every data point you can look at shows that it increased the illness of the children, of adults, of everybody, hurt their mental capacity, everything you could point at. But he's saying actually restricting your rights, which, by the way, they shouldn't even have a legitimate right to do, which, by the way, the Constitution and plenty of other documents make that clear. But they're just going, who cares, Constitution? Because danger. Limiting free movement and association have become legitimate techniques of government. So then he goes on to say, climate change, however, poses an even greater threat. Okay, well, that's debatable. Obviously, you know, I disagree with that, especially when you come to the point of government. I mean, you can't have half of government arguing otherwise and just continuing to run as if it's a foregone conclusion. That's crazy. But that's where we are today. Consequently, he argues, legitimacy may require a similarly authoritarian approach. While unsettling, yeah, that's a nice way to put it, just kind of just a little unsettling. This suggests the political importance of climate action. For if we wish to avoid legitimizing authoritarian power, which is literally what he's arguing for, we must act to prevent crises from arising that can only be resolved by such means. So beside his rousing call at the end to be better so we don't have to do this, right, which is just such a cowardly way of saying it's inevitable. Despite that, he's very clearly arguing that authoritarian control is the only way to get past this kind of situation. Unreal. I mean, it's just sad. And it's right now. Why would you even make this argument in the middle of the biggest pandemic of a century unless you already see the next step, which is climate change? Obviously, at least in one way, we see them already edging in that direction. I'll include that for those that want to see it. And you know, what's the most irrational next step? I mean, this just happened. And by the way, this isn't even the first time. I think it was actually already New York that made this argument before. This is as of yesterday, 2 days ago, December 30th. New York governor declares racism, quote, a public health emergency. Okay, so if you can just randomly declare, something as undefinable, I shouldn't say undefinable, I guess in the context of our broken world today, but something that is as ambiguous and argued, and I'm talking politically, because that is, there's clearly arguments between what we're pointing at today and what actually is racist, despite the definition being pretty clear. We're playing games with it today. But if you're going to use something like that and just declare an emergency, this is a guarantee this will never, ever end. You are forever in an emergency. And that means emergency powers, emergency declarations, emergency mandates, just like with 9/11. By the way, it never actually went away. That's why we're still here. So how do you actually end racism? You see how stupid that is? People can always have their own opinions. So the argument that you're going to create a physical lockdown emergency to stop people's feelings is just irrational and childish. But of course, it's amid their new anti-discrimination legislation. So you see, they're enshrining this into law, the forever emergency and the forever subjective claim of emergency around arbitrary points, like the war on terror. That's the stupidest argument you could ever make. Just terror? What do you mean, like being scared? Oh, no, you mean like criminal action of terrorism. Okay, so it's a war on terrorism. I got it. But then how do you actually wage a war on the action of terror? So somebody creating a political violent action to achieve their ends. So what the U.S. government does literally every day. You see, it's ridiculous. But this is where it never ends. So get ready, because this is never going to end. And the final step, which is I made the point of saying this next kind of on a limb step, we're seeing the emergency's claim, the authoritarianism, the justification of it, and it may go into climate change or any next direction that's leading toward where they want to go. This argument was made in January 2019. That's the volume it went out in. I guess it was first made in August 2018. Compulsory moral bioenhancement should be covert, they say, on bioethics. So if they're going to rationalize the idea that we should put people in lockdown or authoritarian situations because danger, whatever else, now we're even in a situation where they're arguing we should be, you know, forcing injections. They are forcing injections. And we'll get to the later part in the show when we'll discuss again for the second time the New York legislation that's going through discussing forced injections, because it seems that's coming back up again on Twitter and everyone's talking about it. We talked about it right when it came out. It was a couple weeks ago. So if we're talking about that, it's not a far cry to realize that this could be justified, rationalized in their minds, or already may be happening if this is their argument, right? This is the same thing they're saying here. Well, we should just do it. We should just force this on them because no one's going to do the right thing, right? And let's say we get to a point to where half the country's refusing the injections. So now they go, well, we need to make this happen. And how do we make them do that? Well, we have things like this, bioimplantables, these things that Klaus Schwab is already saying is part of what is literally happening right now. The fourth industrial revolution. He's telling you that. No, I won't play the clip again because I've played it many times. Maybe we'll end with that today. So then they rationalize bioenhancement. Things that might work to take your injections, or however else this goes for. Maybe there's an injectable or implantable that fights off everything else going forward. And there's one injection for the rest of your life. Well, who knows? That'll never happen. It'll be one every year, most likely. It says some theorists argue that moral bioenhancement ought to be compulsory. I take this argument one step further, arguing that if moral bioenhancement ought to be compulsory, then its administration ought to be covert rather than overt. So you can argue that, let's say they made this decision already with the injections and said, well, we're going to put something in there that we need to use with nanotechnology, whatever you want to talk about, that they're openly discussing as possible futuristic things, you know, tomorrow, next week, next year. And they decided that this was the necessary thing, knowing that people wouldn't do it. His argument is that we should just do it without them knowing because it's the right thing, they say. If this argument's being made and it is actually being argued by people in powerful positions, why wouldn't we ask whether it's already happened? It says if moral bioenhancement ought to be compulsory, then its administration is a matter of public health. You see, you hear them making this argument, and for this reason should be governed by public health ethics. That's the craziest part. That's what I would say. But see, he doesn't understand it the same way. He would see it and say, well, because it's they think that the greater good outweighs your individual ethics and your rights, and it doesn't. He says, I argue that the covert administration of a compulsory moral bioenhancement. So things like the Mu chip, right? Nanotechnology, smart dust, or whatever else. Anything else you can imagine that would be inside your body that could be used and it would enhance your bio enhancement. And it says the administration of that moral bioenhancement program better conforms to public health ethics than does an overt compulsory program. A covert compulsory program, he says, promotes values such as liberty, utility, equity, equality. That's literally what he's arguing. Again, right back to the argument of the UAE. Acting like these groups that are working towards an equitable future as they literally aren't doing that in their own countries is just childishly naive. This is where it's all going. And they're arguing this for a long time now. So yes, the bio enhancement is a step further down and you may lose some people by getting into this, but I need that connection to be made in people's minds. This is the next step. And even he is saying that, Klaus Schwab. Now bringing this over into Omicron in general and the boosters they're pushing as a rat, justifying it with the idea that this thing may be more dangerous. We need to talk about first the lie around whether this is actually something to be concerned about, which again is the point that some of the quasi-independents focusing on right now, but it's a much bigger topic than just acting like it has changed. I'm still not completely convinced that this is anything even different at all. Yes, they kind of want us to be talking about how Omicron is very different and all the mutations and it's but it's much less dangerous. That's like the acceptable independent mainstream narrative, right? And that there's much more to that topic. As Steve Kirch points out, one person in the U.S. may have died from Omicron. And this is what they're now screaming. We have our first death and oh my God, it's all one, right? We're talking about one. On top of that, it's not even necessarily true that it's someone who died from COVID-19. Two deaths worldwide. First, he asks, he talks about other experts, and they all thought it was zero. And we're using this to argue that we're all in danger? Think about that. But it says, two deaths worldwide. It's panic time. They were wrong. Apparently, the people who thought it was zero, apparently there might be one death. But it isn't clear if they were killed by Omicron itself or simply died with, Omicron. I think it is the latter, he says, since the person already had COVID and recovered, and he wasn't vaccinated, which would have depressed his immune system. Right, so this is where we'll get into the next discussions of Flurona and Delmicron. That I think what's happening is a little bit of it's a continual, or maybe even unaware that they're using it this way, using the PCR test to misrepresent what's actually happening. If you already had COVID and recovered, the likelihood of them getting this, even Omicron, which I'll get to in a minute, even Dr. Malone is now saying what we were talking about before, that it seems that natural immunity is clearly working against Omicron, which I find very interesting because I asked him on Twitter back when it first started, and he seemed to think clearly, like, data is king. Nope, it seems that Omicron, but here we are. what we were showing with the data from the very beginning turns out to be correct. Shocking, again and again and again. But it says they were wrong. He recovered and he wasn't vaccinated. So I think it's possible as with all of these, that there's very clearly something else involved here. Like, this is where we get into the childhood part of it too. Somebody in the hospital who was already there or had the sniffles and went and are told that they have this. Then ask the question how they could even know it was Omicron unless they sent it to one of the few genetic sequencing locations in the CDC to have this done in a process of 48 hours while they're apparently buried with all the other things they're already working on that would have already been tested long before this started. But let's pretend they got this out right away. They just got caught changing it. They're estimating, they're guessing, we don't know. And so this is not an isolated incident, however. There was also one other death case in the world, the UK, where the man died with Omicron. And that was very clear. Not from it, he simply just were just told he had it. And again, I ask how in the world they even knew that in that time frame. They guessed. They looked at the S gene absence and said must be Omicron, despite the fact that the CDC and FDA websites say clearly that that is not definitive. It says very clearly that genetic sequencing is absolute, that you could have an S gene dropout and still be Omicron. You could also have the S gene or the S gene be present and still be Omicron, or you could have the S gene dropout and have it not be. It says that right on the documentation, but seemingly the media doesn't care about that. It's all absolute. You ask somebody in the street, S gene dropout, have to be Omicron. CDC said. Two deaths in the world with Omicron. So we're told. Now he says we need to maintain the emergency. This is why he thinks it's happening. Otherwise, the emergency authorizations go away. And I've made this argument many times. Why would they do this? The emergency authorization expires January 15th. This is what we keep telling you about, the 90-day recurring emergency. They need to keep that in place. So Omicron has to be a major threat. Otherwise, they go away. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think they just approve it anyway. They approved it during other variants that didn't seem to be more dangerous. They just kept it going under the guise that it could be more dangerous. But nonetheless, the argument is this does not appear to be something that's dangerous at all, even remotely. And that's why I wanted to play this quick video from Matt Orfila. Just continuing to show you this idea of the fear mongering around something that does not even, I mean, one death. I mean, just watch this for yourself and tell me that this is not an over, like comical level, like as if we're watching the Babylon Bee representation of what the media is.
Confirmed that the patient died from COVID, but we can say that he was Omicron positive at the time of his death.
Oh, I forgot to say one thing too before this gets into it. One of the main points they're kind of alluding to in this discussion, we won't really get into as much, is that the media, including Fox News, by the way, but predominantly CNN, which, of course, that's, you know, the partisan media only wants to show one side of that, reported this as from Omicron, died from Omicron. And the point they're making here is that clearly even their research showed, and they're admitting that they died with it, meaning they died from something else, and they just simply were told they had COVID when they died. Now, again, why is that even Omicron? Oh, because S gene dropout, but they don't know for sure because they didn't genetically sequence it. That's the point. But they all said from Omicron because they wanted you to think that. And that's not the truth. And we keep getting censored, as all of us keep getting censored, for telling you the actual truth in, you know, sussing out the, while they give you the partial narrative that's an absolute lie by omission, they censor us for giving you the context.
So he died with COVID, but you can't say that he died from COVID.
Correct.
Texas confirmed the first
and
death.
One last thing
he died
for those on the podcast.
Correct.
He says correct. That's Martha Marquez, Harris County Public Health. So that's just so you guys hear that on the podcast. That's important. That's them admitting that the one death they're reporting is just somebody who was tested and told they had COVID, died from something else.
Texas confirmed the first death from Omicron here in the U.S.
Whoops.
The U.S. has now confirmed its first death from Omicron.
Death as COVID surges are surging.
Our first Omicron-related death.
The nation now with its first...
I gotta say, though, I don't like the skulls and the clips from shows and stuff. It's not that I don't even... I think it's humorous half the time, but my point today is that people who want to dismiss things will find the smallest reason to do so. So it's like, I just feel like that's why I always say be better than the mainstream. Like, let's just, you know, I think it's a great video. I think Matt does a great job. But I just think sometimes those kind of things, the over dramatization of it, can be the smallest reason to push people away. And really, we're trying to reach those people that might be on the fence. That's just my thought. But it's a great video. Let's keep watching.
Known death from Omicron.
First confirmed death from the Omicron variant.
The U.S. has also now confirmed its first known death from the Omicron variant.
It's the first known death from Omicron.
The first person confirmed to have died of Omicron in the U.S.
We've just
died of, confirmed. Like, these people are charlatans, liars, manipulators, just clowns. Like, do you think that guy really knows what he's talking about? Or is he just reading what he's told? All of them are like that.
Confirmed the first death in the United States due to the Omicron variant.
Death now from the Omicron variant.
First death due to the Omicron variant.
Death from the Omicron variant in the U.S.
The U.S suffered its first death from the new
strain.
It is very possible
fear.
There have been other deaths.
The first death from the Omicron variant.
The U.S. has reported its first death linked to the Omicron variant.
We're going
to
see certainly hospitalizations and deaths. The one thing that we are seeing.
Certainly hospitalizations and deaths. Like, think about that. Why would you predict? You don't know that. And the data has been I mean, if you've only seen one in the entire world up until now, why would you say certainly see deaths and hospitalizations? You know what I mean? Like, that's incredible to me, because you should say, well, we don't know. It appears to be less dangerous. Why would you go so far over the top to hype up the worst scenario? Because they want you scared. Whether they think it's for a good reason, they want you to get injected and they believe it's the right thing. I don't believe that's why. But if you want to tell yourself that, either way, it doesn't matter. They're lying to you, and they've been caught lying. They continually get caught lying, and you just keep going along with it, whoever out there is. I don't know why.
Is that, if anything, it does not appear to be more severe. It might, in fact, be less severe, but we're holding off on that.
Yeah, because they know it's less severe, and they're like, I keep telling you, you mark my word, they will never say this is less dangerous. They will never say that. If they do, I'll say I was wrong. Just like with Delta, they still pretend we don't know if it's more dangerous. It's just so stupid. As long as they keep it up in the air, they can let you assume it's more dangerous. That's what they do with everything. That's why VAERS is undefined yet dismissed at the same time. If we don't know for sure, how is it dismissed? Think about that.
Till we see how it does in our own country.
So, I mean, you haven't seen the worst of Omicron.
You're absolutely correct.
Hospitals are now bracing for an ominous outbreak of Omicron.
Here's Omicron.
The country appears to be slipping into a COVID vice tonight. The aggressive Delta variant squeezing us from one side, the more contagious Omicron strain multiplying on the other.
Aha. And this will get into our next point, right? Where they're already getting into the idea that these two things are coming together. Oh, could they even combine? No, let's just put that. No, it can't. But we'll get into their propaganda fear mongering in a minute.
How the fuck are you?
Omicron spreading at breakneck speed.
It really feels like our holiday events may be hanging in the balance.
A man in Texas is the first known death in the United States due to the Omicron variant.
First known U.S. death.
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 Death
related to the Omicron variant. Dr. Anthony Fauci is talking about Omicron.
A virus that's capable of hospitalizing and killing people.
Houston is reporting the first known death from the Omicron variant.
You're going to see deaths due to this.
Of course we're going to have deaths like what we see now.
Of course we're going to see deaths like we see now. Of course. Right? Because we have no data. We don't have the information. Everything we do have shows that it's less dangerous. But of course, we're going to see the deaths that we keep telling you should be prepared for, because that's what we're telling you. Who cares what you're seeing or what's happening? That's the narrative. Don't you get it?
Officials in Texas have confirmed the first Omicron-related death, the first Omicron death as well, confirming the first death.
The first reported death now from Omicron in the country.
First recorded death in the U.S. from Omicron.
The first known Omicron death.
The Omicron variant of COVID-19 has arrived in full force.
God.
And so in response to all of this, today I'm raising the COVID-19 threat level from yellow to orange.
Omicron tearing across the country.
Health officials sounding the alarm.
We had our first Omicron death here in Houston.
Our first Omicron death.
We just had our first death.
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 The first known Omicron death.
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 Country recording its first Omicron death. And Americans worry about Omicron.
The president's playbook to tackle Omicron comes as the U.S. just recorded the first death.
A nation in crisis prompts a presidential address to tackle the Omicron spike.
Omicron is serious, potentially deadly business for unvaccinated people. The unvaccinated have a significantly higher risk of ending up in a hospital.
False.
Or even dying.
False.
Okay, but just to be clear, you have one fatality that's listed as Omicron. Is that still true?
Yeah, really important question. So certainly my heart go out to the family of this case, this fatality that we learned of yesterday in Texas, and we are still learning more about that case.
So he died with COVID, but you can't say that he died from COVID.
Correct.
The first known Omicron death
in the U.S.
The country's first known Omicron death.
Death related to the Omicron variant.
The first known U.S. Omicron death.
Got Omicron, and it led to this severity in which he died.
I mean, it's just so frustrating how continually it's nonstop fear-mongering. In a time when there actually is evidence to suggest that it may not be as bad if you believe their narrative. And even then it shifts away. I mean, it's staggering to me. It absolutely is that it's so obvious, but people are almost addicted to that fear, you know, and that's kind of the thing that they've created here. But they keep hyping this up, right? The one, but what about all the deaths of reports rather of death in regard to the injection? Or rather, the ones that have been proven. Do you realize that they've even admitted on the CDC's breakdown of severe adverse events that they are rare, but they admit death? Isn't that interesting? Even though if you ask people elsewhere, nobody. But of course, you look at the reports. What do they reference on those severe adverse events? They reference VAERS. But we're not supposed to look at VAERS because it's all fake news and garbage. But they use it to argue that it's not that severe. Isn't that funny? I'm not even making that up. But the point is, they still point to 10,000. They act like only 10,000 reports. They can't even be honest about the reported deaths, which are way over 20,000. It's just so embarrassing. The point being that they're hyping up one death that is not even caused by Omicron. And yet we have reports of 20,000 plus deaths after the injection. And that's not even discussed. That's how dumb this all is. Now, Delmicron, to start, is what they were alluding to right there, right? Uh-oh, we've got a vice here. We have Delta and Omicron. Okay, well, Omicron is shown to be basically the cold, right? You get some sniffles. Two people worldwide, even under their illusion, understand, and their constant lying, have died. The hospitalization is dramatically down. By some estimates, 80%, and I'll show you that next. Okay, so we have this benign thing that does not seem to be hurting people. Then we've got Delta, which again, let's make sure we're clear on this, that this is their narrative. I'm not past the point of thinking these things are just complete misrepresentations of vaccine adverse events and claiming narrative, claiming variant. Okay, but taking it from within their narrative, even the proof around Delta, which I know other people, including people like McCullough, have said that it's super bad, the data's not there. And look, this is what I keep saying. I'm going to stick to what I think the data proves. And by the way, we've been shown to be, like, for instance, more than once now, I have made an argument based on the data that Malone specifically, I only say that he basically said wasn't true or disagreed. Now, I'm not saying that he was necessarily wrong. I think he was just still sussing out the data, or it could have been. But the reason I say that is because he's later evolved his opinion based on new information and come out to be correct. That doesn't mean that I'm always right. I'm going to be wrong all the time. But in these specific circumstances, because I believe I stuck to the data and the most current information, and I continually dug through this, it seems that I was slightly ahead on some of these things. So what we need to think about is that Delta itself, using the data from the very beginning, has very clearly shown a decrease in hospitalization and all these different discussions. We showed this right in the beginning with the two graphs. There's the rise in cases, and then months afterward, there was not a correlating rise in everything else. And all the way through this, we could see that. Now, on top of that, it shows you that all the information, the peer-reviewed science and otherwise also showed this. Now, what we're looking at now is that you could point at Omicron and look back at Delta, and you can see that Delta itself seems to be more severe, I guess, if you're comparing the two. But that if you're having two things, something that's basically the cold and comparing, most everything will look more severe. But if you really break down the actual risk, remember, from the very beginning, what's supposed to be the worst part of this is still less than the flu for most people. So whether or not it is worse than all, it's still less than the flu for the vast majority of people. The vast, vast, vast percentage of people are at basically no risk of dying. And it's the risk from flu that you normally have, which people die from every year, we're told. So thinking about it that way, having Delta and Omicron simultaneously, does that even sound like a risky situation? Not to me. Especially if you've got natural immunity, which clearly seems to continue to apply most clearly to Delta. Everyone agrees with that. Anyone that's looking at the actual science, Malone included. Delta, you have natural immunity for if you've been sick in the past. So that's more than half the country. So what are we actually seeing here? We're seeing, in my opinion, adverse events that are being named other things, or somebody being told they've got COVID and then they actually have the flu and making that something. What they're jamming them together and calling Delmicron is, in my opinion, an absolute mirage meant to get you scared enough to think something new is happening as we come into the next flood of adverse events and the new flu season, which we're going to get into next, which is suddenly back. But the point I want to show you is that this is coming, and this was as of, I searched for this yesterday when I was going to do a show yesterday and decided not to. All from India. Every one of them are coming from Indian outlets. COVID-19, Delmicron, every one of them are Indian outlets. And by the way, weirdly enough, all of them are pointing to U.S. data. So my question was, why in the world is India talking about this before we are if they're pointing to our data? I think that kind of shows you the controlled flow of information. Now I'll show you where it is today, which is now suddenly all the mainstream media is reporting it. But yesterday it wasn't. But let's start with what this is. Here's December 28th. What is Delmicron? Scientists warn of super strain. Okay, so let's be really clear. They are absolutely trying to imply that this is not two things hurting you and causing you to be more sick than usual, but rather two things that become one thing. Now, let's ask ourselves, first of all, how in the world is likely or even possible that the same virus can infect you at the same time because they're different strains? As far as I understand it, and clearly having talked to other experts, this does not seem like something that makes sense. Now, on top of that, if they were something separate, even then arguing that they somehow blend into one thing inside your body. Now, none of these things sound like things that we've discussed in the past or that experts would say is possible, but anything is certainly possible, especially with the world we're in today. But realize that they're not proving this. They're just saying this. They're suggesting that this is caused. And then what happens then? Well, nothing means anything again. And it never has, because now we've got some unexplainable new super strain that's blending new. It's not, is it coronavirus? It's something new? Who knows? Now everything everywhere becomes this new problem, or all the new dangerous things of heart attack and stroke. And all of a sudden it must be this new super strain. It just becomes once again, whatever they say it is. According to the CDC, and that's the point here, guys, all of this stems back to what the CDC tells you is happening based on their research that you barely get to see fleshed out. And then we also know they've been caught multiple times aggressively lying with their really flimsy studies. We'll get to that in a minute, too. According to the CDC, over 99.5% of infections in the country in November were caused by Delta. Again, that's a guess. As they just were forced to admit, to bring it down from 73% Omicron to 23% in the country. A 50% swing because they were guessing and forced to admit it was an estimate. Even if all the media continues to yell to tell you that we know for sure it's all Delta Omicron, because CDC said. That means they don't even know, or they're lying. Probably both. 99.5% of infections. But wait a minute, they just told you that this was all Omicron. Even Fauci was saying that. So now it's 99.5%? Well, we'll leave it there for a minute. You can realize that it's just whatever they say, wherever they say it, and you're just supposed to go, uh-huh. As the world still comes to grips with coronavirus's variant, said to be highly transmissible, if not deadlier than Delta, you see, so playing that game, maybe, we don't know, that has dimmed the chances of a pandemic-free 2022, a fresh surge in U.S. and Europe is now being blamed on the combination of the two. You see, they've already lost control of the fact that Omicron is not more dangerous, even though they're still standing on that same argument. You realize that, like, for instance, Pfizer hasn't stopped their production of an Omicron-focused injection. They're in the middle of that 100-day time frame they told you. Why wouldn't they have stopped if we've already clearly found out that that's not even what we need it for? In fact, most experts are now saying we should probably let this spread because it's giving everyone immunity. It's not hurting anybody, but they're still making it. How did that even make sense? They already just said, we're almost there. So we're going to rush out with some new thing that's only focused on Omicron? Well, no, you see, because what's going to happen, you're going to find this out when it happens, that it's going to be something that's meant to broadly apply to lots of variants. So why was Omicron then used to surge forward? Because it was just a choice. We were probably already working on it, and we're just going to point to the new variant and make sure we hype the fear of that variant so we can make sure you agree with this new shot, even though it was the least dangerous so far. Delmicron, I mean, these names are so stupid, by the way. Flurona, Delmicron, a combination of the viruses Delta and Omicron variants can transmit faster. So we haven't even defined if this is real. You understand that? They're saying this is said to be. These are experts going, this might be happening. This has not been studied or proven. But they're then saying it can already transmit faster. How do we know that exactly? While COVID-19 infections only involve a single mutant strain, two can apparently strike simultaneously in extremely rare cases. So if it's extremely rare, how in the world is it the responsible? Is it responsible for a surge in cases? You see, they're not even trying anymore. Extremely rare apparently means infecting half the country because they're extremely rare. Blood clots are hurting all sorts of people everywhere, right? It's responsible for the new surge that we're blaming on everything. And look at the cases, but it's extremely, extremely rare. Just, I can't get past how stupid. They don't even care, it seems. Anyway, going forward, next article, Delmicron versus Omicron. Okay, so now apparently we have Delta combined with Omicron in some new mutant strain becoming something new, maybe, versus Omicron alone. What should you be more scared of? Right, great framing. You're going to be scared somewhere, so let's pick which one you should be the most afraid of. How about we recognize that you probably shouldn't be scared of any of it? Let's discuss what you should be the least afraid of. But nope, they want you to be scared. December 31st, it was yesterday. Here's what it says. Viruses are programmed to mutate. I love the framing there. Programmed? You could be, you know, I just find that really interesting. The viruses themselves are, like, what's the right word there? Designed? Programmed? I mean, that makes it sound like somebody made it that way. Just an interesting point. Viruses are programmed to mutate and variants are bound to emerge. I just can't get past that. So is the case with SARS-CoV-2 virus. Since the onset of the novel coronavirus in early 2020 up until now, new variants have cropped up time and again. Not true. Not true. The entirety of 2020 was marked by a couple. But yet, since 2021 and the aggressive increase of vaccinations, we've seen them explode almost every other day or every week. By the way, we're already at a point where we're going, a new variant is here, a new variant in France. Oh my gosh, a new variant. We'll get there in a second. Already, it's already happening. We can't even get through the first one. We're already pointing to the next one. Oh, it could be more dangerous. All the hype starts all over again. Is that one going to combine with these? And now we've got the Delta Omicron, you know, just these mixed of three names? Probably. Nothing means anything. It's just we're so far down the track that we can't even look back. We haven't even securely stood on the stone we're on now. We haven't even established that we are even on a stone and we're jumping to the next one. With the latest coronavirus variant Omicron wreaking a lot of havoc around the world. What? Yeah, this is just the floating narrative. So the Omicron that clearly is being shown to have only killed, or rather people that we assume are associated with it too. That's it, too. Hospitalization almost gone, almost 80% down, but wreaking havoc around the world because that's how we keep you scared. Scientists now warn against the emerging of a new threat, Delmicron. Why are they doing this? Because they're right now struggling to keep people fearful of something that's not dangerous. So we just jam things together. It's like a comic book. Reports suggest that the rise in the number of COVID cases in the West has been caused by a mix of these two things. So you see, again, reports suggest that's what's happening. Yet somehow you knew up here, where was it? Or was it the last one? Somehow you knew that they transmit even faster. Right? How is the thing that we haven't fleshed out already being shown to transmit faster? However, it is yet to be seen whether the new wave of infections will be worse than the impact of Omicron. Right. So the new wave of infections that we haven't even established are happening because of this thing. Right. They're suggesting this could be happening. And yet now we're pointing to the actual I mean, gosh, this is so irritating. We don't know what's happening, but let me point to all the things that it's causing. Seriously? Or if it could pose more dangers to the vulnerable, the thing that we don't know. Unlike other variants of concern and interest, Delmicron is not a new variant. So now it's just a real thing. It's already here. Reports suggest this might be combining with something that may be happening. Now let's jump into explaining exactly what Delmicron is, what it does, the symptoms, and how far it goes. The thing that we don't know is happening. Right. Gee, I wonder if Delmicron is going to be the next big threat. What do you think? Good God. In the medical fraternity, Delmicron has been referred to by as a combination of Delta and Omicron. the member of this task force, COVID-19 task force, in a recent interview said, quote, Delmicron has led to a surge in cases across the US and Europe. It is not a new variant of coronavirus. It is a combination of the two things. So now we can begin to see what there's experts basically just saying these two things are happening at the same time. And that's causing problems. But then you got these media outlets that are actually making the argument that they've become a new thing. And no one's stopping that because it keeps you scared. While no remarks have been made by the Indian Council nor the Indian National COVID Task Force on the existence of this thing that we don't know is here while we're telling you is happening, the growing numbers of COVID cases have ignited. So therefore, it's happening. What do you know? As Deltacron symptoms differ from Omicron, because we just established that we don't know it's there, but we can tell you they're different, right? A Delmicron infection takes place when a person is co-infected with Delta. That's not what the expert just said. He's saying that the presence of both those things in the community are causing a rise in cases. But now they're actually arguing you can become infected with both. And then they're making that sound or telling people that it means it's a new strain altogether. It can occur in the form of a reinfection, which, by the way, is not likely, I would say not possible, in the largest, in every peer-reviewed journal out there showing you the vast majority of people are completely protected to new variants of concern with natural immunity. More than half the country has. It's not reinfection. People are getting sick because of the injection. People are getting sick or losing their natural immunity because of the injection, which, although rare, is a possibility for people negligent of safety measures, per experts. Right. So you didn't wear your mask, therefore your natural immunity just stopped working. Nope. Sorry, guys. If you're an expert saying that, you're really stupid. As of now, there are no Delmicron-specific symptoms that have come to light. Oh, you don't say. So it's the same exact thing? COVID-19 symptoms remain almost the same so far. Because it's COVID-19. Or if you even believe that's what's happening, it could just be the vaccine side effects. Either way, it's the same thing being called something else. If it doesn't have new symptoms, it's not causing more problems other than the occurrence of rising cases and nothing else because tests are being given everywhere. What's actually happening? Narrative is happening. Fever, fatigue, cough, and loss of sense of smell and taste are the most common symptoms of this infection. Exactly the same. On the contrary, in patients with Omicron, it's just cold-like symptoms, which means it's probably not even the same thing, if any of it is. Under this one, with rising Omicron cases in India, will Delmicron outbreak occur? Framing it like it's one thing. That's not by accident, guys. Many health experts suggest that Omicron variants in India could be milder, since a large number of people have already been exposed to Delta, gaining natural immunity. What? I mean, you just made an argument right up there. Yeah, I'll let it go. That said, while the cases may spike during this festive season, no Delmicron cases have been reported because it's not a real thing. Adults, children, and older adults, everyone is prone to coronavirus infection. Yeah, that's what they just said. Given that the virus is highly infectious, anyone who does not follow COVID-appropriate behavior is at risk. So children who have a 0% risk of dying, who are literally at 99.7% of people are not at risk from this thing. I'm 1 in a million chance of dying under 19. There has been reported barely over 400 cases of child deaths. None of them have been investigated by the CDC, as even Newsweek called out. Or they also called out that over 50% of the hospitalizations were lies. They're not in danger. But this article just throws them in. Everybody's prone. Everyone knows that's not true. But let's use it to argue Delmicron is a thing and you're all in danger because this isn't working for us. So we'll just jam something new into there. Now, on top of that, they're using what to detect this? PCR test. That's what they're telling you. Now, we just did an entire show on the Estine dropout. Make sure you look that up because that's not what's actually happening. In fact, what we're actually calling these, in my opinion, are negative tests. Before were negative, and now they're just a negative S gene, which used to be negative in certain contexts, is now being called Omicron. Could be the cold, could be nothing. PCR tests, Twitter says, are, quote, highly accurate at detecting COVID-19 and variants. Oh, look at that. Apparently, I was wrong. So you know how the English language works. PCR tests are highly accurate at detecting variants. Right? So they're saying both of them, just so we're clear. But just that's the claim I want you to see. They're saying PCR tests are highly accurate at detecting variants. Apparently, scientists and fact checkers say, well, we know that's not true. In fact, it's very clearly not true. And even the most just, I mean, I'll just, I don't even know which one will come up. Let's see. Right there. Let's just grab the first one. PCR fact check. Here's Reuters. Fact check. Here's the person, a spokesman for the CDC, says very clearly, it is correct that COVID tests are for current infections. COVID-19 tests for current infections, quote, will not be able to tell you which specific variant you might have. Oops. Right, Reuters, are you fact-checking what Twitter said? No, you're fact-checking some post on Facebook. Isn't that funny? Well, here is, again, Twitter literally telling you that these PCR tests are highly accurate at what Reuters just said is not possible. Why? Because it's not possible. Because what they're using is, again, S gene dropout to argue something's there. It's a negative, and they're saying something's there. Even their own documentation says it has to be genetically sequenced. But here's the best part. It says in their title that this is what happens. PCR tests, highly accurate. Their next bullet point says researchers can use genomic sequencing to analyze samples after testing is complete to identify variants. Okay, so you literally, according to Reuters, yep, you just countered your first claim. PCR tests are highly accurate at detecting variants. No, genetic sequencing is what does it. So this either means that Twitter, or whoever runs this ridiculous fact-checking outlet, is not even, they don't even understand what they're saying. In fact, they don't even understand that that doesn't make sense, because they don't know what they're talking about. They're running with narrative. How stupid is that? These are the people that are deleting posts and fact-checking people, highly credentialed experts, deleting people like Dr. Malone, mind you, and they are right now saying this is what it does, and then countering their own claim in the third bullet point. That's the most ignorant thing I've ever seen in my life. But fact check says, incredible. But let's go to Flurona. We're on Flurona. This is not a joke. This is not the Babylon Bee. Again, pointing out that all of this is coming from India before now it's being discussed in the United States. This was yesterday. And note that it's all Indian outlets, all of them. And again, same point. All of them are pointing to U.S. data to make this argument. So why did it take them reporting it in India for the U.S. media to report it here? I find that very telling. But you won't be surprised that flu rona is exactly what it sounds like, that they're actually arguing in the same way, mind you, the same way that flu is combining with coronavirus to become new things. But that's not really what they're saying. They're sort of saying the same argument here, that, well, it's just that the two things are happening simultaneously. But then allowing the media with their flimsy and terrible journalism to argue that they are the same thing, but really just get you scared that they're creating a new pandemic. Here's where it came from first. Israel reports, shocking, Israel, of course, that comes from Israel first, reports the first case, and see, this is my point, of Flurona. When you say it's a case, people think Flurona is a new thing. Now, that is what they want you to think that. Let's be clear about that. Delmicron, Flurona are meant to be thrown at you as new things. It's sort of like when they argue the same as always that when they are, like, for instance, with Iraq and WMDs, they'll swear until the end of their days that we never suggested that Iraq was involved with 9/11, or we never suggested that. Even though you take the poll, every 90% of Americans were under the assumption Iraq was part of it. You know why? Because they did exactly stuff like this. They created a narrative campaign that made you think that's what they were pushing at when they weren't necessarily saying it verbatim. So Flurona and Delmicron become new dangerous virus pandemics, even though what they're technically pointing at is two things happening in the same situation. But the media won't say that. Now, here's the interesting part. They're actually telling you this woman had flu and coronavirus, and it's so dangerous. We're so afraid. And all the media is breathlessly reporting new Flurona threat. But she didn't even get sick. She had very mild symptoms and she was let out right away. What does that show you? If you catch, let's just say, taking it at face value, you catch flu and coronavirus and you barely suffer from it, that means they're not really dangerous. I mean, the very least in her case. And then you find out that she wasn't vaccinated and they want that to be the best thing. Look, she got sick because she wasn't vaccinated. How about you realize that she didn't get sick because she wasn't vaccinated? Think about that. Birthing mother diagnosed with both coronavirus and influenza, which, by the way, simply means that she was told she had both because they tested her with faulty PCR tests and, I think, RIDT tests, which are for the flu, which are also rife with false positives. Health officials estimate Many other patients also came down with both pathogens, but have not been diagnosed. Now, here's another interesting point. All over, I've seen other reports claim that they're telling you that there are more other cases. Health officials have said there are other cases, but they just haven't been diagnosed. That's not what they're saying. They said that they estimate there could be more, but they haven't been diagnosed. How would you know they're not there? They are there if you haven't diagnosed them. But again, this is mainstream. I'm talking about Western media. They're framing it as they are there. They've said there are plenty more that they haven't diagnosed. That's an intentional play on what they actually said. That's how Western media works. Israel documented its first case of flu-rona. Again, a simultaneous infection. The double infection was first identified in a woman who went into labor this week. Now, first of all, recognize that means she was not sick when she went in, right? Because she went in and they test them, they do all this stuff, and they went into the normal process. And you can look into this for yourself. So that means this came up after she was in there, which is what most of these cases are, getting tested once in the hospital and just being told you have the thing, even if that's not true. Now, it says that according to the hospital, the young mother who is not vaccinated, which I find very relevant in a good way, against either pathogen, is feeling well and is expected to be discharged from the hospital later Thursday. So, you know, she's still in the hospital because she had a baby. As it says down here, the health ministry is still examining the case, which was relatively mild. So why are we screaming across every outlet and around the world about flu-rona? Because that's the next narrative point. The unknown, the fear about what we don't know and how this could be building. Even if it's less and mild, it could build and hurt the hospitals, exactly like they're doing with Omicron. The breathless fear-mongering about the unknown around something that's clearly not dangerous. For your safety, of course. Relatively mild, both of them simultaneously. I mean, for crying out loud, the flu by itself kills people, they say. And yet both of these things simultaneously while she was pregnant, nah, no big deal. But let's all breathlessly scream about it for the next week. And is yet to determine whether a combination of the two viruses causes more severe disease. So we don't even know if it actually can. Or maybe it works together to make you less severe. We don't know anything. But it's already made it around the world and back, because that's how this works. Health officials estimate many other patients also have come down with both bugs, but haven't been diagnosed. That means they don't know. That means there could be more cases. We have no idea. And that gets framed as there's more. Last year, we did not witness flu cases among pregnant women and birthing mothers. Or rather, what that means is we didn't have any flu anywhere because we used it somewhere else. Now, he says, today, we are seeing cases of both coronavirus and the flu that are starting to rear their head. Now, is this because we're just testing everybody everywhere and that's what's being told to us? Certainly possible. We are seeing more and more pregnant women with the flu. It is definitely a great challenge dealing with a woman who comes in with a fever at childbirth and you do not know if it's coronavirus or the flu. So you refer them the same. Most of the illness is respiratory. How do you not see that? It's the flu. You're not in any more risk because you deal with them the same way. And that's the reality, in fact, that most people are, in fact, the risk of the flu. So is it just not the flu? Can we not just realize what we're actually looking at here? That these are just manipulations around. This is what Denny Rancourt's been telling you the whole time. That the data very clearly shows that there wasn't even a pandemic. This was a game of statistics. That people are being hurt with things. People are being hurt by the actions they're taking, with the masks they're being forced to wear, with the lockdowns that are reducing their immune system, with the injections they're being given, which dramatically reduce their immune system. There's a lot happening right now. You could very clearly argue that the 2020 was a miscategorization, a lie, an illusion of numbers, and then using the pain that they caused to claim that that was what was happening. And now we're using and recategorizing the vaccine adverse events that nobody's even categorizing. They won't even talk about them. Hundreds of thousands of problems, 20,000 deaths. Doesn't matter. That's 1% of the total. And yes, there are reports. I've always said that. Now, that could be the case, or it could be that there is something in the mix causing problems, then you're building on that. Either way, that does not make sense. He noted that the patient treated did not experience any unusually harsh symptoms. Sure sounds terrible. She was diagnosed with the flu and coronavirus as soon as she arrived. Both tests came back positive even after we checked again. The disease is the same disease. Now, I just want to make sure you hear what he said. Now, this is a direct quote. Now, as always, Wynette is not somebody I would trust. This outlet is going to say what they want you to hear, but this is what the doctor said. Quote, the disease is the same disease. They're viral and cause difficulty breathing since both attack the upper respiratory tract. He just said what I said. He said they're the same thing. This disease is the same disease. That's a direct quote from the doctor. Meanwhile, in Israel, may be facing an incoming influenza epidemic. Right. Now, it's all flu's back again. No one's going to question why that makes any sense. It's not. I mean, we have, if the argument is that Delta, COVID being here in general somehow suppressed COVID or whatever, or flu, whatever you want to argue, that's the same thing that's happening right now. You watch it refresh. Gotta love that. Most patients have contracted influenza A virus, which, by the way, let's make sure we're clear. The RIDD tests are apparently unable to differentiate between the influenza A viruses. I just read that the other day. So if that's what they gave, I don't know how they would know, but it says which is included in the flu shot given in Israel this winter, which, by the way, is interesting as always, because they guess at what the next strain will be. Interesting, they got it right. So they say the influenza virus can give rise to a whole host of severe symptoms. Get this, including pneumonia, among other respiratory complications, myocarditis, and death. No, not a joke. Here is Wynet telling you influenza virus can cause myocarditis. Well, what do you know? So too can their injection giving at the same time, but I wonder if that's going to be associated. What's interesting, though, is you can tie back, you can find research around influenza and the prevalence of myocarditis long before COVID started. I was going to talk about it, but I decided to put it down for today. But the point being that when you really dig into it, guess what it ties back to? It seems to be a very clear focal point on the tie to H1N1 in 2009 specifically. A weird spike in myocarditis around just the 2009 manipulation, which, by the way, was clearly a manipulation. We're talking swine flu here. That was very clearly not what it turned out to be. Even the WHO called it a pandemic of fear. Now, we should ask the question. Is that myocarditis because of this thing that seems to be no real different than anything before it, or because it was the entry in the pandemic of fear that drove the useless antivirals and medications and injections, as the WHO called it, the experimental injections that led to things like we're seeing today? Is that not possibly exactly what that could have caused? We should ask that question, shouldn't we? Since I point to it, I'll bring it up right here. You need to remember that this was in 2011, and here's the WHO literally calling out the repeated pandemic health scares caused by H5N1 and H1N1 and called them a culture of fear. Worst case thinking replaced by the precautionary stocking of largely useless antivirals and irrational vaccination policies. In both of the pandemics of fear, the exaggerated claims of severe public health threats stemmed primarily from people like Anthony Fauci, disease advocacy by influenza, got the hiccups all of a sudden, experts. Finally, last point down here says, or was it, scientific advice and resource allocation is best handled by, right here, disease experts wish to capture public attention and sway resource allocation decisions in favor of the disease in their interest. Okay, point is, H1N1, in their mind, in 2011, by the WHO, was not real. It was a pandemic of fear, even though they don't say that today. So my point is, we pushed these useless injections that weren't necessary, as even the WHO called it. That's their claim. I'd be censored on Twitter for saying that right now, even though the WHO said it. Is it not possible that the myocarditis, which is tied to 2009, is caused by the injection campaign? Absolutely it is. And we should ask that question. Even then, going forward, we should be real asking why it's suddenly being brought up again. Don't forget, influenza, but that one time decades ago is what we tie it to, can cause myocarditis. Well, maybe that's because myocarditis is exploding in the children right now because of the injections. Either way, don't worry, Flurona is going to kill everybody, right? That's where this is all going. And it's completely irrational. Now, finally, make sure you see this part. The health ministry has called on the general public from age 6 months and up to get vaccinated against the flu. The flu vaccine can be given together with the coronavirus vaccine or at any time. Right there. Published 2 days ago. They're straight up telling you, and you know the point I'm going to make, the flu vaccine can be given together with the coronavirus vaccine, except that's literally not true. This is as of the end of November 2021. This is from European document from Pfizer's data, as you've seen many times. Emergency risk management plan. This is Pfizer's documentation. Showing you all the rest of them too, but to make the point that I just read, they're telling you, you can take both of them together, except that's not what they tell you from Pfizer. Interaction with other vaccines. COVID-19 mRNA vaccine will be used in individuals who may have also received other vaccines, on and on and on. It says, may affect the efficacy or safety of either vaccines, have not been performed. Studies to determine if co-administration of these vaccines with other vaccines may affect the efficacy or safety of other vaccines have not been performed. How is that possible? I don't know why this never gets away from me. I can't stop making this point. That's why it's right this moment. How are people still sleeping when you can look at this right now? It says it right there. We don't have the safety data to tell you it's safe to take the flu shot next to the injection. Yet everyone, including the Western media, saying take the flu shot right next to COVID shot. It's totally safe. Because the media, because the Pfizer's telling them to say that. The government's telling them to say that. The media happily parrots it. It's not true. And since we're looking, remember that long-term safety data, as they're telling you as of last month, is not there. Long-term data of COVID injections is unknown at present. Unknown. They don't have the data for autoimmune or inflammatory disorders. They don't know. The data is limited on people who are frail with comorbidities, otherwise known as elderly people. There's limited information on the risk. Pregnant women, safety profile of the vaccine is not known. Immunocompromised, the safety profile of the vaccine is not known. Yet we're screaming these people should get it first. This is criminal. They know that's there and they don't care. It's literally criminal. Now, as Wyan points out, after Delmicron, it's Florona. Israel reports first double infection of COVID and flu. And just to make one point, it says, at a time when the world is grappling with Delta and Omicron variants, and the combination of both is called Delmicron variant. See? They're calling it a variant. Israel has reported its first case of Flurona, the simultaneous COVID infection with flu. It's not a variant, but this is where they're going to drive to. They're going to get to the point to where they call this something new of itself. That's what I believe, and I think it's happening right now. Here's the Flurona discussion. Mixture of COVID and flu, dubbed Flurona, causing difficulty to breathe. The first case of Flurona, a mixture, they say, see, not just having them both, but a mixture. They're a new thing in your body, combining to be super Flurona, has been found in a young pregnant woman in Israel, according to reports. She was unvaccinated. Woman has presented with relatively mild symptoms. We read this to you. But again, if she was unvaccinated, and it was super mild, and people who are just simply, people who are vaccinated are ending up in the hospital with Omicron, what does that tell you? Data matters. Now, up until today, actually, this was not being reported anywhere outside of India, as far as I could tell. And I'll just show you this first. As of today, I looked, and now suddenly, and see, this is 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago, 5 hours ago. It just shows you again, this was on my list in documentation from yesterday. We were going to talk about it. And here the media, you guys, you yourselves are that far ahead of the mainstream media. You absolutely are. Because you see this stuff too. Half of you send it to me. And they only report it now because there was some hold, some reason they weren't supposed to talk about this until it was told. And all of them flood out with it the next day. Flurona, Flurona, Flurona. It's all the big discussion right now. Independent, Daily Mail. So here it is in the Sun. Dubbed Flurona, December 31st. Oh, and I think it was just simply to make that point to show you that it's been being reported here. Now, the idea of this is absolutely absurd. It's absolutely trying to drive you into some new state of hysteria to justify why we need to force this on you. The undefined, that's always worked for them. But I don't think people are going to buy this. Especially how ridiculous it is, as even they picked up on, that it's happening right alongside each other. Delmicron, Flurona, what else are they going to just jam together? And by the way, don't miss that this is completely hypothetical. They are arguing this may be something that we could see, and every media outlet has picked up on it and jammed it down your throat as the next variant. That is how clearly driven they are to continue the narrative. That's not even what these people are selling, and they're already halfway around it. It's so insulting. Now, on the idea of Omicron itself, right, as they're screaming that somehow the combination of two other things that aren't dangerous, just Omicron, and this is why they're so desperate to jam these things together, is being shown to be catastrophically less dangerous, as you already know, because we've already told you this since the moment it got discovered in South Africa and Botswana. Here is a report from the Ontario Public Health of Ontario. The results, the risk of hospitalization or death, and this is just Ontario, was 68% lower in Omicron compared to Delta. Almost 70% reduction of hospitalization and death. Don't you think that should be the best news ever? But nobody talked about it. And in fact, all they do is now scream, Ontario included, of the new threats. See, that's not news. That is absolute propaganda to keep you scared, to keep you moving in the direction they want you moving in. Now, looking at this graph, before we get there, this is Bloomberg. I'll show you this as I refresh in a second. Omicron severity, and this is, again, this generally, this is all across the country. New study shows the hospitalization rate, 80% lower. 80%. Let's hype up all the danger and fear, right? Here is the act. You can see it on Bloomberg. It's just because they put a paywall on it because failing mainstream media, you know how it goes. In South Africa, excuse me. So South Africa specifically, 80%. Which, by the way, you knew because we told you right in the beginning. Now, here's the graph they're showing you on Public Health of Ontario. I want to point out a couple things. Look up top and you can see one thing you'll notice quite quickly is that they do not give you the breakdown of vaccination status for hospitalizations or deaths. I wonder why. I think you know why. And we'll point out quickly after this, you know, some examples of showing you that. But total cases. Delta. And this is specifically in the time frame. Where was it? Let me look at the graph again. You got me fresh this, actually. So right here. November, and this, again, these weirdly truncated time frames. And they do this, by the way, in some CDC studies I'll show you in a minute that'll make you laugh. And there's a reason they do that. Only November 22nd to December 17th. Now, you'll see 8,875 Delta cases. You see 6,312 Omicron cases. Now look at the vaccination status. Zero doses. Right away, you can see a dramatic decrease in general from 3,896 to 1,080. Now, all of these, by the way, should be taken with a grain of salt. Using their narrative to point this out, just recognize that you can see one dose, two doses, and three doses. Now, look at the number comparison. Remember, especially when you combine all three of them, one, two, and three, every single one of those numbers is higher than the zero doses, every one of them. And that's, I mean, just look at Omicron specifically. That's the obvious reality. You have, right here, 3,467 cases 3 to 6 months after two doses, only 1,000 Omicron after zero. Then you got another 149 after three doses, right? I mean, it's just, it's obvious the cases at the very least are more. Now look down here on Omicron for deaths. Zero deaths. Obviously, this is only in Ontario, obviously, but then recognize that even under Delta, they only had seven. Hospitalization and death? Dramatically down. But let me ask you a question. Is seven deaths, even in the same time frame with everything else that's happening, I'm willing to bet you my life that there is a endless string of categories, whether even involved with personal health, that have more than seven deaths over the last week. But see, we've lost context here. It doesn't even matter. Every death, everything, you're hyping up any death anywhere all the time for fear. But this just simply shows you that their narrative does not match what's actually happening. On top of that, the discussion says, to point out the fact that it's been there since the beginning, the results that you're seeing here align with the findings from South Africa, from Scotland, from England, all of which have demonstrated substantial decreases in the risk of hospitalization with Omicron. Yet they still use it to hype all the fear, all the risk, everything. Right here on the front page, this is from January 15th all the way to December 31st. Right, so this is the beginning of 2020. This is a different article. To end of 2021. You can see here, they've only had a small increase, but a decrease of 20% in death. And make sure you see that's only an increase of 12 in that time frame. That's it. An increase of 12 deaths in that time frame. But we're pretending we're in the middle of the biggest pandemic in a century, right? They're going to keep reporting this as absolute end-all, be-all fear. Now, this report, as I've shown you many times, this is the UK documentation I was going to get into again, UK Health Security Agency, and this was going to be week 52, And I've shown you this many times in regard to the breakdown of hospitalization cases and just showing you very clearly that it's aggressively slanted towards the fully vaccinated cases, everything else. Just like this was something like 80-90%. Same with hospitalizations and deaths. This one, I think last time I checked, I think it was almost 60% total, 60% of the hospitalizations on the side of the fully vaccinated, the vast majority of deaths on the side of the fully vaccinated. But I was going to show you the next one. And guess what it says? Please note, and I did see this last, but I wanted to make the point as I think why it's happening this week specifically. Please note that there will be no publication of this report in week 52, which is right now. Publication will resume on the week number one of 2022, which will be the end of this first week of the year. Now, let me ask you something. Why would they make that one the one? In my opinion, the most important culmination, the end of the year, the point that it's very clearly the most important change off, where we see Omicron, we see all this change of stuff happening, we see the building of something they're claiming is very, very, very mild. So if we continue to see an increase, which has been continuing, of the people who are fully vaccinated, that would be huge right now. This is probably one of the most important weeks, and I think that's why it's being hidden. They're not even going to show it. They're just going to skip to the next week. So we will never see that breakdown. And I think there's a clear reason for that. Now, Dr. Malone was just on the Joe Rogan show, which I'm sure you guys have seen. Hopefully you're watching it. As I said, the Rogan-Malone interview will be important for reaching the masses, and I truly believe that. But you guys should know that if you watched it, you probably already know this. You have heard pretty much everything they talk about on my show already in the last 2 years, as well as a lot of other independent media. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't watch this. It's powerful. But hopefully this will shift the discussion for the average person. But just know that this is stuff that we were talking about as far back as the beginning of this whole discussion. And a lot of the new in science has come out and how we've continued to talk about it. Now, as I said before, there's things right now that Malone has evolved his opinion to end up being on the same vein of what we've been talking about for a long time. Not because I was guessing, but because we were using the data. And that makes me very proud of the work we've done with you helping. Because this is an expert. In fact, one of the most powerful experts out there because of how clearly he is the leading expert in this technology. They just don't like that, though. But I'll include all this in here for you. Down here, there's a link to the full interview on Spotify. I've also included the link to my interview with Dr. Malone from, when was it? Let's see. June 30th, 2021. Which again, you can actually watch this interview and find that he says things in this interview that have since changed. Discussions of all, I forget what the main one was. I asked him about something specific that he has then very clearly changed his opinion on. And I value that greatly. Because this is somebody who is being careful to make sure that they go by the data, at least as far as I can tell. And since that is fleshed out more clearly, he has shifted his opinion. And you have to respect that because people in the mainstream do not do that. But it's good to see them on Joe Rogan. Here is something I wanted to point out that he says in this post he just put out, Dr. Malone. Yesterday, I had to take an antibody test in order to get into the studio for Joe Rogan's show, which I don't like, by the way, but so be it. The good news is that my natural immunity from my last round of COVID is robust. So he's showing you that his natural immunity continues to work to this day. This brings me again to one of my biggest issues with the public policy response. Natural immunity, as he says, equals or trumps immunity from the genetic vaccines. I think it's obvious, as all the peer-reviewed science shows, that it doesn't equal. It's much better because these things drop off, as I'll show you again next, after 2 months. Your natural immunity has been shown by every peer-reviewed journal I can point to be lasting, durable, and robust in every way, including other than neutralizing antibodies, which is the only thing these other injections seem to do. Because, he says, the natural immune response is broad against all 29 proteins of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And he says right here, appears to hold up better against Omicron, which is something he disagreed with me on Twitter. So I think that's awesome to see. We've been telling you that. This sustained and robust natural immunity also applies to children. Absolutely. That was that. I think, let's see if he linked to that one study we already talked about. Yep, exactly. See, that's funny. This is the one we posted on that Twitter discussion where he basically said the data didn't back it up, but I think maybe he's come around. He says, we all know it. Why won't our government and the mainstream media admit it? I'll include this so you guys can read it. This is important. This is the one that says at the end that, let me see if I can find it real quick. It says that children specifically have the ability, or everybody really has the ability, who gets natural infection to continue to make this going forward. Maybe it was at the top. Let's see. I won't look too long. Oh, yeah, I think it was right here. Yeah, so it's in contrast. So we also observed antibody responses against nucleoprotein. Oh, that wasn't it. Dang it. Oh, well. Oh, well. Well, read this for yourself. You remember I've watched it. I went over this in depth in a previous show. The point was, somewhere in the study, it makes a clear statement that this goes forward. This is specifically around children, but it's also, it shows at the end that this is more broadly discussed around people with natural immunity. But going forward, it says, why is it the CDC website that lists 146 million people having already had COVID in the U.S. has not been updated since October 2nd? Right. Just like I just showed you the 10,000 are said, they constantly do this on purpose. Then when you catch them, they act like it was a mistake, an oversight. A quick back of the napkin calculation projects at least another 20 to 30 million have had COVID since then, bringing the number of people who've had COVID to around 170 million. I promise you it's more than that. They've been saying 160 for way longer than just October 2nd. It's obviously more than that. Then he says, so now comes a more transmissible but weaker version of the virus. So we're told we should all be celebrating. Over half of us have natural immunity. Over half of us are vaccinated. Now, again, I argue the vaccine does nothing good for anybody, especially since it removes things from your body, as they've shown you and the studies have shown, and the antibodies drop off very quickly. But also remember that this was around long before we were told it was. So people have clearly been building this, and people have also shown natural immunity to this who had this, but who would never even come across this. People who were in the controls who had never come across the infection or never and didn't have the injection, or as JCI Insights, which is usually the one I point to, says very clearly, a majority. This is the most important one. This is in March 15th. A majority of uninfected adults already show pre-existing antibody reactivity. And when you read it, it's because cold, SARS, previous, and this is talking about before all of this. So if a majority of uninfected adults already had reactivity, and then we have more than half the country with natural immunity, and then you can even go on to pretend that the injection adds to that, his point is very clear. And I made this 6 months ago, that we've already been here to their fake herd immunity argument. Not that it's herd immunity is fake, but that what they were claiming they were going for was fake. But it says over half of us are vaccinated. Unless we are elderly or have significant other comorbidities, we will be fine. Now, I don't know why that argument is made, because he just seemed to suggest that the injection itself wasn't good for most people. Weird thing to say right there, but it says for many, if not most, will seem like another cold, if we notice it at all. Even the unvaccinated or COVID-19 naive person should be just fine if they don't have significant comorbidities. Of course, one isn't actually allowed to suggest these ideas on social media. One can't be at all critical of the government pandemic response or the fear porn. Such talk will get you banned, censored, and branded with a scarlet letter, anti-vaxxer. Use formulation. Oh, I wanted to include this, by the way. He just added this. We've been telling you D3 this whole time. Use a formulation that combines the D3 with vitamins A and K. Please keep up with the zinc, vitamin C, and magnesium. Work on weight control, glycemic control, and please exercise. Let's see. Somebody's saying something. Send that to my Twitter. I'll look right now. Apparently, Spiro has a screenshot for me to look at. But going forward, the idea of natural immunity, even now Dr. Malone is beginning to point out, is clearly tied to your natural immunity and variants going forward. I think that's really important. Now, last note on the note of natural immunity before we go even further. ICANN is involved in an important one here. I think this is really interesting. I'm just looking at this, sorry. Anyway, so as it says, ICANN demands CDC authors withdraw rigged natural immunity study. So important. And this is as of yesterday. We've been talking about this since this happened. And so too is ICANN and Highwire. They used a flimsy, like pathetically rigged study. That's the joke I keep making about some flimsy study from Kentucky with 12 people. Like, I just keep making a joke about it, but that's what I'm referring to. It's bad. I mean, really bad. Here's what they say. On October 29th, 2021, 53 authors put their name on a paper that they should be, at best, deeply ashamed of, and at worst, held liable for. 17 of those authors were members of the CDC's COVID-19 response team. ICANN sent them a letter detailing the gross scientific misconduct evidenced in the paper and demanded they withdraw their names from the study. The non-peer-reviewed paper, which is so funny, right? Because they're constantly throwing that in the face of people like us. Oh, it's not peer-reviewed. Meanwhile, they're exactly the same thing they're using to argue their stance, because that's the only way they can get it through, because that study is horrible. I wouldn't say it couldn't get peer-reviewed in this broken system, but it's really bad. I mean, anybody can look through it and be like, well, that doesn't make sense. The non-peer-reviewed paper titled Laboratory Confirmed COVID-19 Among Adults Hospitalized with COVID-19-like Illness, which is so funny to me, I'll make that point in a second, with infection-induced or mRNA vaccine-induced SARS-CoV-2 immunity, 9 states, January, September, ridiculous title, purports to compare the risk of infection between those who previously tested positive for COVID and those who received a COVID vaccine. It misleadingly concludes that the unvaccinated have more than a 5-time greater risk of becoming infected with COVID-19 than those who are vaccinated, which, by the way, flew in the face of literally every other peer-reviewed journal. If it strikes you as absurd based on the dozens and dozens of other peer-reviewed studies that show the opposite, and based on everything we know about natural immunity, that it's because it is. It's really stupid. Now, the funny part about this is I've made this point many times. This is the CDC study, mind you. Oops. Oh, darn it. This is the CDC study. Oh, well, I guess that's why I couldn't highlight it. It's right there. Well, it says COVID-like illness, right? COVID-like illness. So, in the beginning, when they said, oh, influenza-like illness, you stupid anti-science conspiracy theorist, that doesn't mean COVID. That's not how that works, because science, they're wrong, of course, because it was, I've told you this many times, they use influenza-like illness just like they're using COVID-like illness here, because they use these studies to apply broadly to other things that it could apply to, other respiratory illnesses. So when they say influenza-like illness, that applies to other respiratory illnesses going forward as well, such as things that are very clearly similar, like COVID-19. They just didn't want to apply because they didn't like what the findings were. But now, when they want to find something, you can find their study and they use COVID-19-like illness. It's just so silly how these same people will refuse to acknowledge that that's something they were lying about back then. You all remember that if you've been watching the show from the beginning, it cracks me up. That's how stupid this is. Now, bringing this over into the variant, the new variant that's going to put us all at risk, and how the boosters they're pushing around it are collapsing, because we're already on number 6, it's already happening in Denmark. But before we get there, breaking news, southern France reports a spread of a new SARS-CoV-2 variant, B16402, with 46 mutations and 37 deletions originating from Cameroon. You see, because now the reporting is going to be about the new, oh, it's got 37 mutations. My last one had 36. Oh my gosh, 46 mutations, 37 deletions. Like, half the people citing these things don't even know what they mean. Because you know what? They don't necessarily mean dangerous. But they don't know that, though. And they just, oh, I'm mutated. The super mutant Ninja Turtle variant, it's coming. South of France. As of press time, a total of 67 patients, all displaying moderate and severe conditions of a disease and requiring hospitalization, have been identified and been infected with the new variant. So it's extra worse now, you see? It's extra worse. And they're all the ones with severe stuff. So these are people that have already been sick, and they test them. Right? So you're seeking out the sick ones and going, do you have it? Do you have it? Do you have it? And guess what they're using? Of course, PCR test, of course, with a high cycle threshold, because they use 40 to 45 on the side of COVID. On the breakthrough cases, of course, they use below 28, because that makes perfect sense. It only makes sense when you realize the 28 will make sure you get less cases on the side of breakthrough, and the 40 to 45 will make sure you get more cases on the side of COVID. That's all you really need to know. The science, I've gone over a million times. So if you go around testing all the sick people, well, what's going to happen? Well, you're probably going to get false positives that show you that, right? We're here, not to go over entirely, just rang true in my mind when I said that out loud, is an exact example of how you did something. Something like that has happened before. I've read this many times from 2007. It's called the Epidemic That Wasn't. All it is a quick breakdown to how they used the PCR test in 2007. They went around, they tested everybody who looked sick, because that's what made sense, and it all told them they were sick, and they all assumed it was whooping cough. The 8 months, they shut down everything. Shut down everything. People got vaccines, they were restricting hospital beds, they got all sorts of antibiotics, and everybody was quarantined, and turned out not a single case of whooping cough. You know why? Because there, the issue was not that they overreacted or did anything inappropriate. Oh, wait, well, that wasn't the right one. It was over-reliance, I thought was the word. Well, it says right here, there's no national data. Weird. I want to find the one spot. That's frustrating me. Well, I've read this many times over, but it basically breaks down to the fact that they're telling you this is the story of the epidemic that wasn't, didn't happen. And it says, now as they look back, epidemiologists, infectious disease specialists say the problem, here it is, was that they placed too much faith in a quick and highly sensitive molecular test that led them astray. You know what that test was? PCR test. You've seen this many times. My point is, this is what they say in this discussion, that we can't do that because it leads to epidemics that aren't real. So what do? They take that same test, they walk around, do the exact same thing. You look extra sick, let's test you. You look extra sick, let's test you. And then you end up telling yourself it's all what we think it is. Then it becomes the new variant because the new test, and you see how this works. Anyway, they say 12 patients were identified and having been infected with the new variant in late November, early December. Late November, so the same time that Omicron was supposed to be happening? Interesting. Any case, here is what they're pointing to. December 29th, new variant in the south of France. PCR testing that screened for variant-associated mutations show an atypical combination, and there you go. So they don't know for sure. They're using a PCR test and doing something like they do with Omicron. Oh, look, there's an S gene dropout. There, that means it's a new variant. Okay, so all that really is happening is they're getting a negative in some way, one or three of the different genes not showing up, and they associate that with negative high symptoms of some kind of problem. They go, well, it can't be this because this is an N gene dropout or S gene dropout, whatever they're calling. Then they go around and test all the people that look extra sick, and they keep getting similar negatives, or rather what they think is something new, call something new. Now, it could be something like that or something very different, but at the end of the day, it's obvious this is not, the PCR test alone is not capable of what they're telling you they're doing. They're applying it that way by pretending that things aren't not showing, therefore mean something. They could or they could not, because even the CDC and the FDA say that those S gene or N gene dropouts could or could not mean what they think it might mean. Genetic sequencing is the only way to find out. So now we're yelling about a new variant based on PCR testing. Shocking, that's where it's led to, right? PCR is the linchpin to this illusion. Their analysis revealed 46 mutations and 37 deletions resulting in 30 amino acid substitutions and 12 deletions. What does it mean? We don't even get into it. It could mean that it's completely harmless. They don't even know, and they even admit that. But we're going to fearmonger about it. And guess what? 14 amino acid substitutions, including on these specific ones, and 9 deletions are all located on the spike protein, which is the point. Because the spike protein is what everything is aimed at. That's why this thing is evolving. You see, it's not evolving because your body doesn't do anything different. It's evolving the spike protein because it's continually trying to stop the spike protein. It's aimed at the spike protein, you see? Now, the point is here, on top of that, the Omicron variant alone is already shown specifically to be completely different if you believe their narrative. Then you have to recognize that the injections still based on the original Wuhan strain to this very day have no possibility of having an effect. That's why we know that they're not doing anything other than hurting people. That's why it seems pretty clear that that's what's happening. I shouldn't say not doing anything, but very clearly are hurting people and not having the effect they claim it is. As it says, Omicron is characterized by 45 amino acid substitutions. Okay, so this one says 46. Ooh, so it's one more. Or actually, never mind, this is 30 substitutions. 30, and this is 46 mutations. So this has more amino acids, substitutions. Interesting. So Omicron, I should say, has more substitutions than this new thing they're scaring about. Then it says, including 30 changes in the spike protein. 30 different changes. Relative to one of the earliest sequences, Wuhan, of which 15 occur in the receptor binding domain, an area strongly associated with humoral immune evasion. So it's changed in the way that allows it to stop working against the vaccine. You see, because the immune evasion is still working specifically in regard to the natural immunity, as even Dr. Malone just pointed out. Now, it says efficacy partially recovered by a third mRNA booster dose. Now, think about what they just said there. The media keeps screaming at you, as we're getting into next, the third dose will save you, even though they've already showed you that's not true. But that was never the case. as even the science they're supposed to be trusting shows you that all it does is give a partial recovery. Get your third dose and you get less than you ever had before, but that works. See, all they said was it improves, but it still doesn't work. It says, we also show that immunity from natural infection without vaccination is more protective than two doses of the vaccine, but then they go on to say, but inferior to three doses. But that, by the way, is simply not accurate. My opinion, but if you don't believe me, look up all the information I continue to show you of natural immunity. All the different studies that literally say lasting, durable, robust, and on. So, you know, you could dive through this article itself and point out the ones that they're referencing, or rather they act like it's still undefined, or simply that their natural immunity in people who have the injection, which is who they tend to use in these studies, are less. None of that adds up with what I keep telling you. But clearly, this is different. Clearly, it's not working. And then adding to that the point that, as I've continued to show you from August, that if you keep giving people an injection based on the Wuhan strain, which all of them are, all of them, and then come up against what they keep telling you is the majority, I guess right now 70-something percent, since they reevaluated. Or, by the way, you get into this, it's not just Delta, it's other variants, but specifically Delta. Well, that creates a risk. Antibody-dependent enhancement. I mean, it's very clear. It's telling you that if you come up against those things, antibody-dependent enhancement may be a concern for people receiving vaccinations based on the original strain, and then coming up against these variants. Isn't that exactly what's happening? Yes, nobody cares. That's the point. They know this won't. That's why they're so desperate to rush out these next things. All they're doing is increasing your issues. Now, on that note, even though we know that, Israel approves the fourth injection for the most vulnerable. Just like we told you, the third starts out with most vulnerable. Not everybody, just for them. Then it becomes mandatory. Then you do the same move with the fourth. Then you make it mandatory. Then you make the same move with the fifth, over and over. They didn't even try to justify this one. Israeli citizens are outraged. You didn't even give us medical justifications for this. You just rolled out the fourth one. And not just for the most vulnerable, people with compromised immune systems. Same point. How does that make sense? Use in immunocompromised patients. The safety profile of the vaccine is not known in immunocompromised individuals. The only thing they're using is Pfizer in Israel. That's it. So you think they don't know that? No, they know. They don't care. They simply do not care. We're going to actually approve it before anybody for the very people that we don't know it's safe for. So that calls into question their entire health apparatus and calls into question everything they're doing. But who cares? Because fourth shot. Israel also extends it to elderly in care facilities. Oh, great. The very location that's continued to be the most affected. Well, same point. Missing information. Use in frail patients with comorbidities, which is elderly people, at least in part. There is limited information on the safety of vaccines in frail patients with comorbidities. So at the very least, they don't know for sure it's safe. But there you go. Giving it to them anyway. And we're the crazy ones? I mean, I would love for someone to even remotely try to justify that. You can't. The only thing somebody on that side of the narrative could say was, well, there must be a reason. There must be an explanation. You must have the wrong data. Blah, 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 blah. Nope. That's the most recent data, and that's what's happening right now. There's no way to misunderstand it unless you just want to ignore it and put your head in the sand. Oh, guess what? It's also not just Israel. Here's Ontario for you, offering fourth COVID vaccine dose to long-term care residents. The same group we just showed you that they don't know it's safe for. Mandating the booster for staff. I love how we're still calling it booster, even though we went from third to fourth and we're still pretending like it's a booster. As they're already forcing the third shot. It's not a booster when you go, when you're forcing it down the line. It's not a booster when it's part of the regimen. It's not a booster when it's being forced. You don't mandate these things if it's, I mean, for crying out loud. But Ontario, Canada, Israel, it's already happening. Do you remember when it was a conspiracy theory that there would even be more than two? Or that it would be forced at all? Oh, yeah. Well, going forward, actually, I'll make sure I didn't have anything written in there if I didn't think so. Here is the next part for Ontario, right? Don't forget, we just showed you the data in Ontario as well. The reality that this thing is not as severe as they're making it out to be. And on top of that, it's not even that severe in general. But most of this seems to be on the side of the fully vaccinated, just like everywhere else. Okay? So going back to the point, in Ontario, in the place where it seems to be aggressively slanted towards the vaccinated, and on top of that, in a location that this thing is not even that dangerous as everywhere else. Ontario is now rolling out their QR code vaccination system, and they are requiring it starting next week. But we're all crazy conspiracy theorists, right? If you've been using the vaccine certificate you downloaded when Ontario first released them, you may need to get an upgrade. Right. So now you're hooked. You're stuck. You cannot do these things without, one, a specifically government-tied app that has control of the information, a QR code tied to your medical history, and then the use of that to access services and public places. A QR code system. This is like, if the beginning of all this, if you brought up that this was going to lead to a QR code system for vaccine passports, you would have been laughed out of the room, regardless of how obviously accurate it was. And here we are. I mean, it's just that ridiculous. As of January 4th, 2022, the Ontario government will only be accepting enhanced vaccine certificates. So now you're an anti-vaxxer if you don't update to the new system. With QR codes in spaces where proof of vaccination is required, in pair with the Verify Ontario app. Complete top-down control by the very government that has forced you into this position by removing things they didn't have the right to remove. But we're crazy. And as Dr. Eli David points out, thanks to mask mandates and COVID passports, you know, like exactly what they're using right in front of you right here, this exact situation. So thanks to that, New York has successfully flattened the curve, except along the wrong axis. It's not just New York either. You can look at this everywhere for that matter. Everywhere they're doing an aggressive testing campaign, guess what? You're seeing an aggressive rise in cases. Remember when we told you that would happen? When we told you they were going to increase that testing situation like a month ago, and we said, get ready for a rapid increase in cases? Well, I'm sure they're blaming it on everything else, but it's weird how the correlation works every single time, isn't it? It's also weird how the deaths and the hospitalizations aren't correlating with it. Maybe because you're testing and giving everything else the name, just like it was in the beginning. Just like it was in the beginning. And on top of that, you're using all the vaccine side effects as well. So it's looking like it's even worse. That doesn't make sense. I mean, even if you just want to argue its cases and that alone, aren't the passports and everything else, the masks, supposed to stop that from spreading? Clearly, that didn't work. But yet, they're going to force it in everywhere else anyway, right? Now, on top of that, don't forget, as we already reported to you, the NHS app is going to be used for domestic and travel passes, but also mental health, social circumstances, political opinions, lifestyle. It's listed right in their documentation. We've already shown you this. They're already telling you this is going to be used to track your mental conditions, what your lifestyle choices are, whether you've been a criminal or not. How does that have to do with COVID-19 and keeping you safe from the pandemic? It doesn't. Here, both the links are included right here. I'm going to revisit this in the future with an upcoming show, but I just want to include this for today. As he points out, Biden says if medical teams advise it, that he will issue domestic travel vaccine requirements, just like we reported in Europe, in the United Arab Emirates. So Biden is literally telling you that he will restrict your free movement between states, even within the country, if you don't get your injection, if the people around him tell him that's the right thing to do. This is authoritarianism, totalitarianism. That's where we are. That's what's happening right in front of you. All sides of your government wrap justifying where we're going. And don't forget, we've talked about this as well. Digital documentation of COVID-19 certificates from the WHO. As of August 27th, we went over this whole document outlining how those certificates would become digital before it was supposed to happen, before it was a conspiracy theorist or theory, right? Well, it's not just everywhere else, guys. Here's Utah. This is the United States. Does this variant that's very clearly less dangerous mean that we should get a fourth booster? Gee, can you guess what they said? Can you guess what they think you should do? Get a fourth booster because we're all going to die, right? That's where this seems to go. Well, we've already been through this, guys. We've already gone through this progression. This is from December 8th. Pfizer says booster, they're talking about the third one, neutralized Omicron. Pfizer lied and said the third booster stopped this from harming people. That's what neutralized means. Removed harm. So that doesn't mean it can just come back tomorrow. If you removed harm, neutralized means it's done. It's dead. It's done forever. You have neutralized the threat. So Pfizer lied to you. They came out and said, good, take that. Even on that same day, they came out and said, but a fourth one may be needed. so that it doesn't neutralize the threat. See, it's all a game, and the media and the government are happy to play along. So on December 8th, they said, get the third one, you're good, you're all safe. Here they said it on another article from December 12th. Pfizer booster shots are effective against Omicron, they keep telling us. Here it is on December 15th. Fauci says boosters are enough. But you see how they're playing the game, right? In this article, they're talking about the third and only the third. But see how they frame it? COVID boosters are enough. So keep getting them every 3 months. That's what they want you. That's what they're thinking. And I can almost promise you, either way, that's what this maniac is thinking. And either way you look at it. But this is the third booster trying to get you to get the third booster. And then, this is the same article. This is December 8th. This is the point. So how is it possible that on December 8th, Pfizer can come out and tell you it neutralizes the Omicron threat? The third one doesn't. But then the same day in a different outlet tell you, the CEO can tell you that the fourth one is probably already needed. I mean, if you are going along with something like that, you're choosing to be misled. How you can't be neutralized if you're going to need a fourth, but they're towing the line because that's what you do. And then, of course, it came to this discussion where they said, well, it doesn't actually work, though. So a month later, they said, oh, that one we told you should get because it'll save you doesn't work. Won't stop it. Just like all those people we censored were telling you. Surprising. Well, here's the exclusive from Daily Mail. And this is important, actually. But I promise you, it's only going to be a stepping stone for why we are, you know, dismissing these people or the people saying this or why these are no longer experts, whatever it is. Daily Mail reports, are we on the brink of over-vaccinating in the fight against COVID? Experts warn dishing out fourth jabs in spring may be unnecessary. Too late, it's already happening. And Omicron may be world's natural vaccine that finally ends the pandemic. That's surprising, isn't it? UK should hold off on a new booster and wait for data on long-term impact. Nah, they'll never do that because that's going to be taken till next year or more. They won't do that. Scientists say, now, and they won't be scientists as of tomorrow, they'll be fake news conspiracy theorists, say giving a booster every 3 months is not feasible and may not improve immunity significantly. Shocking. It almost sounds like exactly what we've been telling you since the beginning because the data said so. The US and the UK and other major economies could be on the brink of over-vaccinating people in the fight against COVID. Israeli officials have already announced their intentions to embark on dishing out another round of booster jabs, meaning both the US and UK will eventually face pressure to follow suit. That's an interesting framing, isn't it? Even the Daily Mail seems to be suggesting that the Israeli government will have the driving influence to drive policy in the US and the UK. Why? Because they're right, guys, because that's exactly what happens. And that's only talking about the power of the Israeli government over our governments. Pretty damn simple. They will eventually face pressure and they will fold to doing that, even though it's not needed. And even though the governments of both these countries pretend there's no plans to do that, even though there's obviously plans to do that. But scientists argue that rolling out vaccines every 3 to 4 months simply isn't doable and may not even be necessary because of Omicron. And they called for more data on dosing gaps between boosters before pressing ahead with plans to administer fourth jabs. Gee, you mean we should actually wait for data before we jump to the next stone? Yeah, these won't be experts very soon. Some experts claim that benefits of extra jabs are minimal because their primary purpose, preventing deaths and hospitalization, has barely waned after a year of several COVID variants, effectively meaning boosters are adding to an already high base of... No, that's not what that means. I mean, that's my opinion, but first of all, let's make sure we're clear that their primary purpose was always stopping transmission, right? As we've shown you many times.
During 2021, we should be able to manufacture a lot of vaccines, and that vaccine... A key goal is to stop the transmission, to get the immunity levels up so that you get almost no infection going on whatsoever.
Everyone who takes the vaccine is not just protecting themselves, but reducing their transmission to other people and allowing society to get back to normal.
We can kind of almost see the end. We're vaccinating so very fast. Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick.
Now we know that the vaccines work well enough that the virus stops with every vaccinated person.
What a fool she is. What a fool. I mean, that's so embarrassing. Like, I don't know why her audience can't see that, or all of them for that matter. But anyway, it just cracks me up how stupid that is. Now we know it stops with every vaccination given. It's like, are we really going to pretend like Miss Maddow there somehow knew, had all the data in front of her? No, she was told to say that, and she said that. And by the way, she was catastrophically wrong, even in the beginning. But what they're saying is, the primary purpose, which was, and they're lying to you right here, preventing deaths and hospitalizations. Nope, it was stopping transmission. That's what they lied to you about. But even that, though, is not, they say, barely waned. Are you serious? I mean, we just literally showed the UK data. I mean, some of these have to matter, where clearly if 60% of the hospitalizations, if 70% of the deaths are all on the side of the fully vaccinated, that's not waning at all. It's aggressively climbing on the wrong side of the discussion. But they don't care about that. Anyway. So my point being, that's just sort of their way to make it sound like it's sort of working in these care areas, but it no longer works with cases of transmission. That's a lie. Professor Ian Jones, a virologist at the University of Reading, said descriptions of Omicron being a natural vaccine were right. The logic behind the argument is that as Omicron is highly transmissible, but milder, so someone's willing to say that, than other vaccine variants, it can give an immunity boost without causing as much serious illness, or none at all, in fact. With some data suggesting a combination of infection and vaccination providing the best immunity. Now, that's just the people that are willing to lie and hide the data and pretend that, oh, look, these people had basically nothing after the injection, which doesn't make sense, first of all, if you're claiming it gives them immunity. Then they get the natural immunity. And then we have this you know, fledgling idea of natural immunity that's completely dwarfed by natural immunity alone. As the data is all showing you, but they look at that and go, see, look at vaccination, compare it to vaccination and then get infected, and it works better. Yeah, if you included natural immunity alone in that discussion, it would make you look ridiculous. And that's why they don't do that. But going forward, Centers for Disease Control, CDC, says accounts for anywhere from 40 to 70% of the cases. I love how they're saying this. They're talking about Omicron. Now they just cite it as 40 to 70. No, they pretty clearly went down to 23%. They're not wavering on that. They don't know, and they're guessing. But they're happy. They want anywhere from fucking 1 to 10%, right? I mean, it's just so stupid. 40 to 70, so you don't know then? That's great. Like, they want you to err on the side of dangerous, 70%. A UK-based expert says the variant could spread with just a whiff of infected breath. A UK-based expert, gee, I wonder who that might be, says the variant could spread with a whiff, just a whiff of infected breath. They're just trying to scare you. That's probably hyperbole. That's probably just an analogy, and they're probably just saying that it's very highly transmissible. Not more dangerous, but a whiff of breath. They want that to sound like all you got to do is be around. Like, it's just, that's a lie. They are hyping up this danger of something that's not more dangerous, and it drives me crazy. Future variants may even be more mild, Professor Jones told online Mail Online. Adding that the need for healthy adults to get up to jabs, to get top up jabs could soon recede. Instead of doling out jabs every few months, he said annual boosters, of course, would be more feasible. And there you go. It comes back down, right? It comes back down to boosters every year because natural immunity or because of some weird quasi manipulation of the things together. Overall, this is a walk back of the narrative a little bit, but it depends. It depends on where they decide to stop that or whether they're actually pulling back at all. And this is just narrative. I truly think that you are having an effect. I think what you're doing is having an effect. This, by the way, was shared by Luigi Warren, the discoverer of mRNA himself, who also, by the way, tweeted out early on, of course, the spike protein can shed. He did go on to say that he doesn't think it's that strong, but he said very clearly that can shed. Right? And then he was censored for it by Twitter until they grudgingly gave it back because they realized, oh, wait, this guy knows what he's talking about. But they've already recently censored Dr. Malone in the same way. But by the way, just take a quick glance through Luigi's thread and he has come on board. He is sharing all sorts of people that are talking about how the vaccination can spread, how Malone shouldn't be censored. He sees it now. It says, just the guy who put mRNA on the map. But this is important. But here is the discussion of the waning, right? So this is what you need to understand as they're yelling at you to get your injections. That's the only thing that you can do when more than half the country has an already better situation with natural immunity. December 29th, waning of SARS-CoV-2 booster viral load reduction effectiveness. Let me close these really quickly. What's insulting is that they continue to act like that makes sense. There we go. I mean, they continue to act like this is like it adds up for them to There you go. Let me get back to it real quick. Where were we? There it is. Now, it continues to stop working consistently, right? I mean, that's the stupidest part about it. It's every single time, and it's every single time, like the exact, these. It's, you know why? Because it's the same damn shot. It's not some new thing you're taking as they try to pretend like, oh, the third one's going to do it. Nope. All it's going to do is increase the problems they're creating in your body. This is just yet another example showing you again for what the third or fourth time that this is what these things lead to. It says this viral load protective effect has been waning with time post the second vaccine and later restored with a booster shot. But remember, that it showed you that it only gets partially restored. It is currently unclear, though, for how long this regained effectiveness lasts. We found that this viral load reduction effectiveness significantly declines within months post the booster dose. Exactly as we keep telling you. It starts waning immediately. Initially increased by 2.7 relative to unvaccinated in the first month post the booster dose, yet then decayed to a difference of 1.3. It's almost meaningless in the second month, and became small and significant in the third to fourth months. Look at that. Insignificant after the third month. Gee, who kept telling you that? The rate and the magnitude of this post-booster decline in viral load reduction effectiveness mirror those observed post the second vaccine. Shocking. Exactly like we predicted. It's going to end up waning after 2-3 months, just like the second, by first, everything else. These results suggest rapid waning of the booster's effectiveness in reducing infectiousness, possibly affecting community-level spread of the virus. And that doesn't mean 1, 2, 3, 4. It means all of them. You get another booster, the same thing. That's what this thing does. That's really important. As Andrew Bostom, MDMS, points out, that's where I saw this, Israel pointing this out. A waning of this after the second month. And it says, disclaimer on your report, this article is a preprint. Of course, this person jumps in. Oh, that's stuff I'm not supposed to think. Oh, preprint, fake news. Except that's what the CDC is using to argue natural immunity. And I promise this person doesn't say fake news there, right? CDC said. So the preprint matters only when it's people saying things you don't like. Got it. So in case you don't understand, the preprint, as this thing is a place where it's printed before it's peer-reviewed, right? The peer review process has been shown to be wildly co-opted and manipulated. Doesn't mean it doesn't matter, but it shows you that it doesn't, it's just because something's not peer reviewed doesn't mean it's not real. And as Andrew Bostom points out, and this is why I showed this, he says, hey, look at the number of peer reviewed COVID-19 papers that have been retracted since this started on Retract Watch. The link's right here. You can look at it for yourself. You'll be surprised to find out that it's a lot. Now, what does that show you? It shows you, first of all, that just because it's peer reviewed does not mean that it's absolutely 100%. And that's what we've been saying on all sides of this. The mainstream media won't say that, though, except when it's pointing at something they don't want you to think. We'll say that in general, whether I'm showing you a study or not. The point is that you should be able to look at it, come to your own conclusions, and compare it with other research, not be forced to look at the only one they want you to look at and dismiss the rest of them. That's called being educated in regard to the mainstream media today. Ignoring things and trusting authority. It's clown world. It is 1984, war of peace. But that many peer-reviewed papers. Now, that doesn't even mean that those peer-reviewed papers are wrong. What's happening is a lot of these are being retracted by the editorial teams. Either way, it simply means that saying, oh, it's a preprint, I shouldn't look at it, doesn't make sense because of how many more have been retracted on the other side. Pretty interesting. Now, to finish this off, Fourth booster doses are happening right now in the U.S., in Israel, in Ontario, in all over the world. And the Netherlands decides to jump it a little bit. Jump the shark, if you will. Netherlands announces plan to give people up to 6 doses of COVID vaccine. This is the 30th. 6 doses. Hugo de Jong, Hugo de Jong, maybe. Jonge, we'll say Jong. Well, Jong wouldn't be in the Netherlands. Jonge, we'll say Jonge. It's probably wrong. Hugo, we get to it. Hugo de Jonge, health minister of the Netherlands, has indicated the country could be preparing another 3 booster vaccines. Another 3. De Jonge, Hugo, wrote a letter to his country's parliament Wednesday suggesting the Netherlands should consider additional rounds of the booster vaccine to fight variants. You know, so more of the same thing that's made on the Wuhan strain that doesn't have really any effect on these differently mutated spike proteins, if that's what you believe is happening. That's what they're saying. The narrative is right there in front of you. And all the data shows that there's no way that makes sense. There's no way it should continue to have an effect on something that's that different, or it's antibodies for a different thing. Especially, and even more specifically, if these things are able to infect you simultaneously, as they're claiming, how in the world would it make sense to make antibodies for something different and you can be infected by both of them? Guys, it doesn't, it's ridiculous. Their narrative is completely disintegrated in the air. It's gone. But they're going, let's just give you more of those things. Three more of them, in fact, with two of them in 2022 and another shot in 2023. The letter also said that the Netherlands has enough booster vaccines for its current booster program. Why is that? Oh, that's right, because he ordered those right in the beginning. And everyone said, see, they ordered all those boosters. We know it's going to go on forever. And they said, oh, you conspiracy theorists. We're trying to help other countries. And here we go. Add it to the list. Somebody really needs to make a real list of just the end. It's embarrassing how many things have been called conspiracy theory that are later proven true, like the next day. He wrote, quote, certainly because only half of regular vaccine is needed for a booster dose of Moderna, we now have sufficient vaccines for a current booster campaign, and there is ample basis for possible extra booster rounds in the second quarter of 2022 and 2023 and forever. Nonstop. The Netherlands has bought vaccine stock to bulk in order to avoid shortages. Of course, that's why. It's not like we planned this out. The country has ordered nearly 6 million additional vaccines alongside the 12 million already bought from Pfizer. Right. It's going to go on forever because this is never stopping. There is already an agreement in place with Pfizer, and that's the point, for at least another 17.5 million doses before 2023. Does it matter if this stops? Does it matter if it, I mean, whether it's already stopped or not, it doesn't matter. The media and the narrative have gone, they won't stop. Pfizer, and we've already talked about the secret contracts, who they have secret contracts with many countries, who's, by the way, that was revealed. Even the mainstream pointed to that. This was documented, leaked information from Pfizer that found out that they were using these secret contracts to force these companies to buy them, or these countries, which they are companies in many cases. So even if this ends tomorrow, they're still on the hook to buy those. So why would they pretend it's over? They're not want to be on the hook for a $1 billion purchase that they don't end up using. There's already an agreement in place, and they're going to use it. Pfizer Biotech is working on a vaccine adopted to the Omicron variant. Yes, exactly. Why? Anybody want to explain that? As we're all going, yeah, things are basically a cold, but we're going to make a new vaccine just for that? You have to see somebody out there, somebody new, has to finally be going, okay, wait a minute here. This does not make sense. Pfizer and Biotech has indicated it needs at least 100 days to develop, approve, and scale up production for a modified vaccine delivered and expected in April. Shoot, just highlighted that. Dang it. So good. So we have half the year to wait. Four or five months wait. April at the earliest is my point. So I'm thinking probably, anyway, the point is April. We're going to pretend that makes sense. We're going to wait all the way until April. I guess it's so stupid to pretend that we're going to have an inject. Like, look, we're already screaming about a new variant right now. Right this moment. Oh my God, a new variant. This is way more dangerous. We're all going to die. And we're going to wait for the one for Omicron. It's not April. I just don't know why anybody's going along with this. I'll just leave it there. They're going to push this. This is the plan. It's not going away. And on the note of the booster shot, I haven't seen a lot in regard to Michigan and this game where they all took the booster, except that they failed pretty miserably. Now, I don't follow a lot of it right now. I used to follow football a lot, but as I understand it, that's not necessarily the way a lot of people thought it would go. But if you got any more information on what might have happened to the players or anything else that, you know, I hope it didn't, but everyone on the team getting one of these dangerous boosters, I don't believe that nothing happened, but there you go. Sadly, they lost, and I would be willing to bet without the booster, it probably would have been a lot better for them. But moving on to the post licensure safety data that they don't want you to see. Aaron Seary doing a fantastic job. The FDA wants to hide pre-licensure data until you're dead, but they also now want to hide, the CDC wants to hide, post-licensure safety data. Three prior posts explained, and they're all listed right here, how the FDA seeks to delay the 75 plus years full production of Pfizer's pre-licensure safety data. While we have that fight, we submitted the request to the CDC on behalf of ICANN for the de-identified post-licensure safety data on the COVID vaccines from their VSafe system, which is a system they set up themselves. Even though this data is available on de-identified, meaning that it's not connected to personal health information, so they say anyway, the CDC refused to produce the data, claiming that it's not de-identified. So either they're lying about that, don't want to get caught for it, or they're just pretending it isn't and they don't want you to see it. So on behalf of ICANN, they filed a federal lawsuit against the CDC and its parent entity, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, to force the CDC to produce it. The CDC should have no issue doing that because they said it was already de-identified. They made the data available to a private company, mind you. Whitney Webb will find this very relevant since we discussed this in the past. Oracle. The CDC's already made this data available to a private company, Oracle, and they claim in a de-identified form. They claim. Remember, Oracle was the group involved with what Moncef Salawi was discussing as pharmacovigilance, tracking you, whether or not you're involved in the study, for 2 years to find out whether there was more problems with the vaccine. That was openly discussed in the beginning, using Oracle, of all things, which is just monitoring Americans. That's alarming. So I almost want to make a side argument here that it might actually be that it's not de-identified. That could be why that's happening. Because they need that identified. That's how they ultimately are tracking and knowing everything, whether you have or not or so on. But that's crazy to me. So Oracle is allowed to have this information, but you're not. It says, what is the VSafe system, you may ask? Oh, that's what it says right there. It is telling that Larry Ellison's company can see the data that Americans' taxpayers paid for, the CDC. They paid the CDC for it, but Americans aren't able or allowed to see it? What is the VSafe system? VSafe. Since rolling out the COVID vaccines, the FDA and CDC have stated that their primary safety monitoring system, VAERS, is unreliable. Why? Because they just don't want to research it, right? They don't want to suss these things out. They haven't done that. They claim they didn't. They dismissed, that's what people want to say, but they just go, it's unverified. Therefore, it's not useful. Even though they right this moment point to it to argue why other situations work for them. It's pathetic. I mean, you can't use it while simultaneously dismissing it, which is what's happening right now. You'll find examples pointing to VAERS all over the place. The CDC therefore deployed a new safety monitoring system for COVID specifically called VSafe. Now, why would they only need to do it for COVID? Well, weirdly, because COVID seems to be the one that's calling out the whole system. VSafe is a smartphone app that allows vaccine recipients only to tell CDC about their side effects. Now, you know why they did that? Because they know they've propagandized enough of them who are taking it to not want to report their symptoms because they don't want to be anti-vaxxers. So it works in their favor. Now, it says the purpose of the app is to rapidly characterize the safety profile of the vaccines when given outside a clinical setting. That's why Oracle. This new system, the CDC claims that these vaccines are being administered under the most intensive vaccine safety monitoring in history, which is a lie. It's not true. That all sounds great, and a CDC document explains the data submitted to VSafe is collected, managed, and housed in a very secure server by Oracle, a private computer technology company. And then Oracle can access this information, de-identified, of course. This means the data submitted to VSafe is already available, de-identified, and could be released to the public. Yet, after they submitted their FOIA request, the CDC failed to produce it. They acknowledge that VSafe data contains approximately 119 million medical entries, but refused to produce the data by claiming that it wasn't de-identified. So they lied. Now, by the way, the CDC's information itself claims that it's de-identified on the website. So they appealed that decision and submitted a different request, expressly asking for only any de-identified vaccine data. Right? So they said, this isn't de-identified. So they said, okay, well, give us everything that is. Right? Incredibly, the CDC just dismissed it, claiming they asked for the same thing. That is how dishonest this is. The FDA refusing the data, the CDC pretending, playing games. As he says, let me break this down. The first request was denied by the CDC because it claimed the request sought data that the app was in the app that was de-identified. But then the CDC closed the second request, which made clear it is seeking only de-identified by claiming the second request was duplicate of the first. The public should be outraged by the CDC's games. The introduction to the lawsuit is copied below, which you can read, with a link to the entire complaint. As with pre-licensure Pfizer data, if you find what you are reading difficult to believe, it is because it is dystopian for the government to give pharmaceutical companies billions of dollars, mandate Americans take their shots, prohibit Americans from suing for harms they may have, yet refuse Americans to see the pre- and post-licensure safety data. It's amazing that this is here. The lesson yet again is that civil and individual rights should never be contingent upon medical procedure. That's the Nuremberg Code, guys. Now, on the general point of risk, I'll leave these for you to read for yourselves, but here's another one. Here's Steve Kirch pointing out the 360-time increase in the rate of adenopathy, specifically your lymph nodes. A radiologist noticed a weird finding. Since the vaccines rolled out, a number of cases of unexplained adenopathy, I believe you pronounce it that way, findings went from 1 in every 6 months to 2 to 3 per day. And what is this talking about? Well, your lymph nodes, right? Specifically things that regulate your immune system. The probably talked about lymphocytopenia and the deregulation of your immune system. Yeah, no connection there, right? Here's another one. Why are so many people going blind after getting the injection? Well, you can read into this, and we don't know for sure, but the truth is that you can show people going blind in a weird time frame after taking the injection. Just a correlation, but nobody wants to ask these questions. Nobody. Especially about myocarditis. They feel like they've done it. We established it. It's more dangerous after the natural infection than the injection. Except that doesn't make sense because the injection is immediate. And people getting sick from COVID is not guaranteed, especially since it's an incredibly slow chance for most people. Then you find out that even their argument is false. Major Oxford study into vaccine side effects finds myocarditis risk in younger males specifically 14 times higher after vaccination than infection. Now, they go on to argue in this study that they still pretend that the risk is higher after natural infection, but then again argue that that's not a guarantee that you're going to get sick. The injection, if you get it to prevent that, is immediate and absolutely increases your risk at a guarantee. Just because you have a potentially higher risk of increase after something that may happen, why would you take a shot that immediately increases your risk of myocarditis? That is just so irresponsible and irrational to me. But here, but inside of this, you find that specifically young males, the group that seems to be focused on this, has a 14 times higher risk after the vaccination, and they don't tell you that. They hide it from you. In fact, just like the CDC did with their Kentucky study for natural immunity, really embarrassingly, this one here that they're calling out to withdraw their rigged study, same thing happening right here. And this should really upset you because this is all about children. As of December 30th, here's the Good Morning America. I don't know why anybody would get their news from some kind of fluffy yard. I mean, you know, this is nonsense. Any of these morning time shows are not news, guys. These are just meant to make you feel happy and part of a club, and they're just giving you the talking points. It's garbage. The View and all these stupid shows. You should be getting your own information. COVID-19 vaccines are safe, they say, and effective for children. Who says that? Well, 3 rapid CDC studies we just completed, of course. Oh, and they fly in the face of like every other study. Yeah, but the CDC did it, so it must be the truth. That's how people actually think. Look at this. One study, which evaluated the safety reports of more than 42,000 children ages 5 to 11 who received a Pfizer shot, found the side effects from the Pfizer vaccine were mostly mild and temporary. It also found that myocarditis, a heart inflammation side effect that has been associated with mRNA vaccines in very rare cases, does not appear to be a risk, they said. I couldn't believe they tried to make this argument. Let's take a look at the study. First of all, it's a huge study all the way from November 3rd to December 19th. Wow. Huge graph sprawling study of 2 weeks. I mean, a little more, 2 weeks. Yeah, about 2 weeks. A 2-week study. That is sound. Okay. And in this, they find during November 3rd to December 19th, Bayer's received and processed 4,249 reports of adverse events for children aged 5 to 11. And guess what? Those VAERS reports turned out to show them that it wasn't that serious. Okay, that's cool. So you're allowed to use VAERS to make your point right here to say this VAERS data shows that it's really not that serious. Well, how about we first of all realize that the VAERS represents 1% of the total? Like, they are literally playing this from all angles. They, unless we look at the study, we might not know, but people like us, We know this is a lie. We know that they're dismissing Veyers on the fact that it's not reliable. And then we say, but it's only 1%. They go, oh, but it's not reliable. Then they go to use it in this context. They ignore the fact that it's only 1%. They take the reported amount and they say, look at that compared to the reality of the world. Therefore, it's not a risk. This is inherently dishonest. They know all the stuff we're talking about. This is exactly why ICANN is saying you guys intentionally lie. This isn't a mistake. You rig this study to lie to people. A very flimsy, short study. And all these people, it's pathetic. But you guys read through this for yourselves. It is unreal. But I just cannot get past the hypocrisy of dismissing everything in Veyers as undefined and unverified, then using it to make your argument. Cherry picking out of that data what you want to talk about, and then ignoring that HHS and Harvard came to the conclusion that that number only represented 1% of the total. Unreal. Let me read that again for you, though. So what they're doing, basically, so you can see, is they pulled from one of their earlier trials, just plucked it out of there. Or specifically, this was, I take that back, since it was December 19th, so it wouldn't have been. But this is specifically a short period of time. They pluck it out. Oops, we're going too far forward. Right here. Oh, no, but I take it back. But the funny part is they're only doing it now. Why didn't they do this during the kid trial? They're looking back at that data from Veyers. They're plucking it out because 42,000 was the number they claimed for the trial. Found the side effects from Pfizer vaccine were mostly mild and temporary. How is that even possible? Are they literally arguing that the every side effect, or are they trying to make it sound like that while they're only talking about? Yeah, I mean, they're saying generally. You could pull up Veyers right now and see hundreds of thousands of pretty serious reports. And yet they just pretend they didn't see them, apparently. It also found that myocarditis was super rare, not a risk. I mean, off the top of my head, there's at least three or four peer-reviewed myocarditis studies that say that this is serious. And yet the CDC just trots out this one where they just pull a couple of Veyers reports and omit the rest of them and say, there you go, see? The reports we're not supposed to look at because it's unverified? A second study, which looked at data from 243 children ages 12 to 17 in Arizona by itself, found the Pfizer vaccine was 92% effective. At what? Preventing infection. Of course. This is not even joke. You can't make this stuff up. Everywhere in the world right now, they're going, this doesn't stop transmission. Delta, Omicron, it's just not working. In the midst of that, the CDC has the nerve to come out with a study of only 243 kids, only in Arizona, and say that 92% of the time it stops them from transmission. These guys have lost the thread. Like, they must be drowning in what's happening right now. This is pathetic. The study was conducted between July and right now, when Delta was the dominant strain, and it wasn't stopping transmission. And why would you do a quick study of only 243 kids in one location? That's so dumb. But they'll love it, and they carried it, and everybody says, here we go, Good Morning America, there you go, see, we told you. Third study conducted when Delta was dominant. Of course, none of this seems to be relevant right now, obviously, right? But they don't care about that. They don't say that down there. They just, people read the study. There, I knew it. I'll give it to my child tonight. It says, third study conducted found that among children 5 to 17 hospitalized due to COVID, less than 1% were fully vaccinated. Well, there's 1,000 caveats in that. How about the fact that there are a lot of kids that go in there that are vaccinated, therefore they don't give them tests, so they don't find out that they have a false positive? Or kids that go in there that aren't vaccinated, therefore they make sure to give them a test. Therefore, you're highly more likely to get a false positive with kids that don't have a threat from this. On top of that, you have all sorts of other caveats in regard to the PCR test, or about the fact that the idea that you got one shot and still be considered not fully vaccinated. Yes, or two shots, or three shots, and 14 days, and you'll still be considered not fully vaccinated. So this is a completely controllable, manageable number. So if you already see that they're lying about everything else, why would they not do that too? This is really bad. And I really hope that people are beginning to see this isn't their willingness to censor people that's making them lose their respect or the trust of the public. Their lies and criminal activity are causing them to lose the respect of the public that they never should have had in the first place. As Steve Kirsch points out, is Omicron putting kids in the hospital? Well, Omicron is mild, so why are kids in the hospital? I bet they're mostly vaccinated, and this is my point, despite what the story claims. If you work in a hospital, let us know. Consider the December 31st Bloomberg story. Kids, COVID hospitalizations hit record among U.S. Omicron surge? This doesn't make sense. Could it be that this is the flu rearing its head again, and they don't know where to categorize this, and so it's, Omicron, I guess, because it has to be COVID, not flu, so you know, there's a lot of hypotheticals here. But what we can see clearly is this does not make sense. You don't just get to make us say the narrative, even though it doesn't line up with what makes sense. If this is mild, why would it make sense that kids are having a hospitalization increase? It doesn't. And all they do is go, well, see, it's happening, so therefore it must be. If we use that logic in reverse, they'd call us conspiracy theorists. So it says in the story, pediatric COVID hospitalizations have risen to record levels as Omicron races across the U.S., amplifying the urgency to get boosters and vaccines cleared for children. No, but that's of course what they're going to push in. Do you know why? Because this is something, let me play this for you, that we need to understand. This is something that is absolutely part of the agenda because it's important you push this on children, and then suddenly you have the justification, or rather the protection, that they need to hide behind.
Views on giving this COVID vaccine that they've made to kids. I know I'm from Canada, and I think that they're implementing that in order to go to school in Canada.
Well, they have to give it to kids because here's why. They cannot market this vaccine without having immunity shield. Oh, I mean, I sue pharmaceutical companies for a living, and I have enough criminal activity that I know about Pfizer at this point and Moderna. If they went ahead and marketed a vaccine where they end up killing people or injuring them, and I can sue them, well, they'd be through. So they're never going to market a vaccine, allow people access to a vaccine, an approved vaccine, without getting liability protected. Now, the emergency use authorization vaccines have liability protection under the PREP Act and the CARES Act. So as long as you take an emergency use, you can't sue them. Once they get approved, now you can sue them, unless they can get it recommended for children.
What?
Because all vaccines that are officially recommended for children get liability protection, even if an adult gets that vaccine.
So I'll leave it there. That's the important point right there. And I've played that clip before. I'll try to remember to include that in the show notes. But so this is the point. So they're desperate to get it cleared for children, even though they don't need this. And this is why they're selling you stories like this that actually aren't even defined and, in my opinion, are completely fabricated. That doesn't mean there aren't hospitalizations happening, but illusion, right? While the variant so far doesn't appear more severe than other versions in youngsters, the growing number of cases means more children are susceptible to serious illness. That sentence doesn't make sense. You can't differentiate between more severe and serious illness. If it's not more severe, more children won't get serious illness. I mean, that's or anybody for that matter. You may get some still, but you wouldn't see a situation where children who have never been affected suddenly start getting more illness because it's less severe. That doesn't make sense. You don't just go, oh, who virus? It's changing. We don't know. Well, yeah, you could say you don't know, and then you have to accept that you don't know and you're making stuff up. But the point is, you don't just point to a dangerous thing we don't understand. That doesn't make sense. New hospital admissions of kids with COVID-19 have increased 66% to 378 a day on average for the week ending in Tuesday, according to the data from the CDC. Shocking, I know. So yet again, here we are back to where the CDC is telling you things that I don't know why we would trust or take at face value. How about the fact that those 66% of hospitalizations in kids could be the flu, just like they were last time, or just like they could be anytime? Or how about the fact that there's a lot of different caveats to this, or how about just the increase of injections that are given to children causing these problems that they're being framed as some COVID-19, or maybe it's flu Rona, maybe it's Delmicron, who knows? See all the caveats in the air right now? It's easy to make this thing, make it look like some dangerous thing we don't understand, thanks to the CDC giving us what they want us to see. Now, he has questions. What percentage of kids are vaccinated? They don't tell you. That is very relevant. Why were they admitted? Did they go in with a broken leg and get tested while they were there and told they were sick? But they weren't really. And they left without being sick, but they went down as a hospitalization because they had a broken leg. That is 100% happening. They've admitted that. The story claims, quote, the majority of hospitalized kids are unvaccinated, according to the CDC. Unvaccinated adolescents 12 to 17 years old were 10 times more likely to be hospitalized than youth of the same age who were fully vaccinated, they said. Now, do you think that even makes sense? How in the world would these kids be 10 times more likely to be hospitalized in a situation with a less serious strain, if that's even what's happening? Again, you need to understand that just because a kid is, they're calling people unvaccinated that don't have their full doses. So some of these kids could clearly be there because of other things or vaccinations that they're not calling vaccinated. We also have the situation that we have most of this group in general are not injected, right? So they're being hospitalized for any number of other things, then being tested, and that's called COVID. Like, I'm not saying we know all of this for sure, but the truth is that neither do they. They're yelling at you about something that's completely manipulatable in a situation where these kids are obviously protected against this, whether from natural immunity or from the fact that they're not at risk. With Omicron, even more so, as both Botswana and South Africa and everywhere else so far have shown you. But he says, color me skeptical, because this problem didn't start happening until we started vaccinating our kids. You can't miss that correlation. Omicron is mild. It doesn't put people in the hospital. It's like having a cold. So explanation, somebody in the comments points out, New York State Acting Health Commissioner Mary Bassett, during the governor's press conference on Wednesday, had just openly admitted to exaggerating the pandemic among children. Why? To motivate parents into, quote, seeking the protection of vaccination. So they're lying to you. You may pretend that's for a good reason, because she wanted to get you vaccinated. But then people use those lies to push things like this or other discussions. Now, here is that point. New York Health Commissioner admits using overblown claims about child COVID hospitalizations to scare parents into vaccinating their kids.
That we gave on pediatric admissions weren't intended to make it seem that children were having an epidemic of infection.
Even though that's what the media reported, right?
These were small numbers that we reported in our health alert. That was based on 50 hospitalizations, and I've now given you some larger numbers, but they're still small numbers. It really is to motivate pediatricians and families to seek the protection of vaccination.
Exactly. Right. And you may even think that's a good thing. The point is, though, they're hyping up this idea. It says concerns around pediatric COVID hospitalizations are growing, especially in the city. Admissions among these kids are up 395%. See how that works? Except that's not that much, though. All it went was from basically nothing to a little bit more. But that's 395% increase, right? I mean, it's just an absolute misrepresentation. They are manipulating people. And that's why she pointed this out. Excuse me, sorry to bust up the manipulation ploy. The reality is they're using data to lie to you every single day. And they may even think they're doing it for a good reason. Either way, they're lying to you. Time to wake up, guys. This is going to keep going until you do something about it. Here's Fauci, even after that, admitting that kids are not being hospitalized from COVID. This is even as they're right now using that to scream that you need the injections, right? They're trying to argue why it's safe for them, why we need to give it to them. On the idea that they're putting kids in the hospital. That's the whole premise. For the past 18 months, we've reported how a large percentage of the hospitalized with COVID were actually admitted for other ailments, only to test positive after admission during routine screening, meaning COVID hospitalizations for the purpose of policymaking and fear-mongering were vastly overstated in many, if not all, cases. Now, Fauci says the same thing.
But the other important thing is that if you look at the children who are hospitalized, many of them are hospitalized with COVID as opposed to because of COVID. And what we mean by that, if a child goes in the hospital, they automatically get tested for COVID and they get counted as a COVID hospitalized individual.
That's all you need to hear. I mean, it's exactly what we've been saying. Do you realize that we've been censored for making that argument? Like explicitly, that exact statement on Twitter, I believe. I mean, that's how stupid all this is. It just has to, you can't say it until Fauci says it first, even though we're pointing to the same data that they grudgingly admit to you way after we said it. It's pathetic. Yes, he says, now Fauci says this. Is this because pandemic politics have changed for Biden administration? I mean, even other sides of the argument can see it. It's all part of the back and forth two-party illusion. The reality, though, is that this is being rolled back to a degree. And of course, the Fox News right-leaning false side of the two-party paradigm are going to capitalize on it for their internal politics, even though the same agenda is going to keep rolling, whether Trump or Biden is in the office. I know you guys don't want to believe that, but it's true. It's the same as last time. So if they're not actually being hospitalized for COVID, why are we using it to hype up the fear around COVID? Right? That's exactly what this is right here. NBC New York. Oh my God, COVID hospitalizations. They're lying to you. Now, on the other side of it, here's something that you can prove that they're also hiding. Haven't done this for a week, I think. It was 383 athlete cardiac arrests back in last time I did this. It was December 25th. It was the day before Christmas, I think. 221 dead. Looks like we got about 11 deaths more since then. I forget. I always do this and I forget what it just said. But clearly an increase in athlete cardiac arrest, up to 395. That's staggering. 395 professional athletes have had cardiac arrest live on the field. 232 dead. That's just professional athletes, not including children, high school athletes, which are everywhere. Now, in case you wanted to see this, I haven't shown this in a minute. I'll include this. But you want to go through this the same way every time. VigiAccess, I'll include just this one. Click confirm, type it in. You type in COVID-19 vaccine. You have to type in that exactly. This is the WHO version. Okay, this is the WHO monitoring system for international vaccine adverse events. The total number of records retrieved, just so we can see this, is 2,873,250. That is 2,873,250 reports of adverse events after this injection of COVID-19. That's what it is. Now, here is just the adverse reactions. And I recommend you go through these and really look at them. Blood and lymphatic system disorders, over 1 million. Or excuse me, that's 122,000. Now, you can break these down and get into all the individual. Look at thrombocytopenia, 7,266. It's never ending, guys. Just look it down this list. Cardiac disorders, 162,842. If they told you that worldwide, 162,000 people would possibly have cardiac disorders after the injections, would you have taken it? If they would have told you that these people would have, I mean, it doesn't even matter if it's just reports or not. You can't have almost 3 million reports and still walk away acting like it's all some big illusion that we can't verify. Makes me sick. Reproductive system disorders, ear disorders, eye disorders, immune system disorders, over and over and over. Injury, poisoning, on and on and on, guys. Look it up for yourself. The media won't. Maybe this has something to do with why Facebook recently changed their little note, which I find very humorous. As this person pointed out, thank you, Gary, for making this scene. Anyone notice they've changed the Facebook notice about vaccines? Used to say they're safe and effective. We all remember that. It's a joke we always make. Now, they suddenly say they are rigorously tested, then monitored for safety. Well, that's quite different, isn't it? Take a look at that. COVID vaccines go through many tests for safety and effectiveness and are then monitored closely. That's even changed since then. Looks like they updated it even a third time. How funny is that? But it doesn't say that they are safe and effective. They go through tests for safety and effectiveness, and then they're monitored for it. A little liability shift? I don't know. Either way, doesn't seem to say safe and effective anymore. Seems to say that they're testing them on your body and monitoring them closely in your body. Because, I mean, look, you're not monitoring them closely in the creation. Let's be real here. They're monitoring them closely in you. That's pretty ridiculous to me. Thank you, Gary, for pointing this out. Right now, they're changing it to update to not be safe and effective, but we'll keep an eye on it in case they might be. Well, in a general sense, this is a pandemic of the injected, not just from cases, but cases are a very clear, obvious reality. To finish this up today, for the most part, 89.7% of people infected with Omicron in Denmark are fully vaccinated. Or had their first booster, which I guess now are both fully vaccinated. I mean, it doesn't make sense, does it? 79.9% of the population is fully vaccinated. Wait a minute. 89.7% of people infected with Omicron. Oh, I see. In Denmark. but 79.7% of the population is fully vaccinated, which is supposed to mean they don't get sick, right? I mean, that's what they kept selling to you as in the beginning. Robert Koch Institute reports released today, this was on the 30th, states that 95.58% of Omicron cases in Germany are fully vaccinated. 28% had their booster. I mean, look, there's a lot of people. This is only about 5%. That's just the people sick with Omicron. But both in Germany and in Denmark, right, you have a huge portion of people that are unvaccinated. Right? I mean, if you're going to argue that their narrative makes sense, you would look at this and say, okay, well, then it would be about 23% of the population should be the ones getting sick with Omicron. But no, it's 90% vaccinated Omicron. Same point here. If 95% of the cases of Omicron are people fully vaccinated, that doesn't make sense. Why aren't the unvaccinated equally susceptible, if not more susceptible? They don't want to get into it. Two-thirds of the 25 people staff based in Belgium's polar station, this is a really good example, infected with COVID despite being fully vaccinated, passing multiple PCR tests, quarantining, and living far from civilization. That is unreal. Here's the article itself. Antarctica. So basically, you've got people, vaccinated individuals, who basically got fully vaccinated so they could go here, took multiple PCR tests, then quarantined just in case before they got here. So now they're at this place. All of them in that same position, vaccinated, PCR tested, and quarantined just for safety. They live miles from civilization. So nobody there is coming in and out. Two-thirds of them suddenly get COVID. This is one of those examples, guys. There is no way this makes sense. You know what you're looking at? Vaccinated people getting sick and passing something around each other, and they're calling it COVID, or it is COVID, or however you want to look at that. But it's vaccinated people spreading it to vaccinated people, whatever it is. Polar researchers in remote Antarctica have fallen victim to COVID despite taking strict health measures, being fully vaccinated miles from civilization. Unbelievable. And of course, we already know it's Omicron, right? Because of course it's got to be Omicron. Has to be. Even though they don't know that. How do you understand? How do they not see what that shows you? This is one I'm going to have to revisit going forward because it's an obvious example. Now, here is Dr. Carl, MD, telling you something that we have to listen to. Of course, the ones that don't want to hear it will call him a conspiracy theorist because it's easy for them to maintain their illusion. He's saying, I see no difference in COVID-19 severity in my vaxxed versus non-vaxxed patients, meaning it does not reduce the risk of hospitalization and death. You can't say it reduces symptoms if it's not reducing your symptoms. If he's seeing the same situation in everybody that comes in, regardless of vaccination status, it's not doing anything other than increasing your risk, in my opinion. That's based on the peer-reviewed science. But this is a doctor's stance. Let's go look at that. Looks like Dr. Malone is trending on Twitter. That's interesting. Let's see really quickly before we move on if it's going to be all a bunch of negative. Oh, no, Dr. Simone Gold, that's good. It's interesting, you know? This is our point from before, is it's like, oh, this is the one that kept getting all the shares, that's why. What's interesting, it doesn't make sense to me. I think it's a great thing that's just getting shared and shared and people are talking about it. But why is this still up there? I'm glad it's not. I'm not saying it should be sent. You know, I don't believe in censorship at all. But isn't that strange? This indicates to me either that this is meant to happen, or, which we should always ask, or this is them, us, and the independent media effectively changing the narrative, at least right now, and then pulling back a little bit. When they're only going to circle back and jam it in again in another couple of months, weeks, days, whenever they do it again, under other guys, climate change, however they do it. This plan won't go away. That's the only way I look at it. But we should be skeptical. It doesn't make much of sense, does it? Finally, Austria anti-vaxxers will be hit with a huge fine that can continue to cut. This is, you know, over 3,500 pounds for refusing COVID jab. Now, this is going to continue, by the way. They'll be hit again, and then incarcerated if that happens. We've talked about this already. Austria would be one of the locations that are forcing people to get the injection. After everything we just discussed and people sharing it back and forth, vaccinated alone in the middle of the Arctic, and yet somehow They're going to fine people for not taking that thing, the thing that seems to be leading to this spread. But don't forget this, like we keep telling you, the goal was never about individuals, guys. The goal is at least 40%. This is not going to stop at that goal, just like it was 60% herd immunity, 70%, 80% herd immunity. The goal is at least 40% vaccinated in all nations by the year end. That's the point. Because this isn't about your country. Just like they kept saying, well, let's just get the state, the county, the country. No, now we need to get all the way over to South Africa. We're all going to be at risk, right? It's a never-ending scenario. You're never going to get everybody. You're never going to get this to happen. It's going to never stop. Because by the time this happens, you have a new variant coming up and we need a new vaccine. And it all starts over again. That's not by accident. But just don't miss the point that it's always been global. It always has been. Here's the New York mayor-elect, Eric Adams, saying he's going to, quote, follow the science. Then he goes on to say, our focus is vaccine and testing, vaccine and testing, vaccine and testing. Make sure vaccine and testing. So then you're not following the science. You're trusting the science, which is not the same thing. That's trusting what you're told is science, or trusting who you call science, like Fauci. Nope. Trusting, following the actual scientific evidence is very clearly showing that vaccine and testing is not even remotely the smartest thing to do. But that's what he's going to do. He's going to keep saying it. As he says, we must say that over and over again. Okay. Well, Biden just signed a $137 million deal with German pharmaceutical company for COVID test strip factory. Guess what? That will take 3 years to build and will only start producing 83.3 million tests a month in late 2024 at the earliest. Is that a little indication for those that thought this was going to be over? You're going to be testing for COVID-19 for the rest of your life. He spent all of your $137 million of your money to build a factory that won't be making these tests until 2024. But let's pretend like this is going to end tomorrow if you do what you're told. That's crazy. This is the point. It's going to continue. That's why test, follow and test, and vaccine and test. Because they're ordering more vaccines. They're ordering more testing. This is the new regime. And don't forget that in New York City, specifically where he's talking about test, there are, we already talked about this, all of these new bills that they're about to pass that are basically creating a situation where they can, it's exponentially worse than other places. They can do whatever they want, whenever they want, as long as they say you look like a threat. As COVID-1984 points out, check out this bill, it actually criminalizes information they don't like. And before we get to the next part, I'll show this one since this is what reminded me of it. Here's the actual bill. Senate Bill 37568 prohibits the knowing and reckless promotion of unlawful or false material, which you know what that can mean, anything, including what we're doing right now, even though it's completely backed up by scientific research and peer-reviewed data, providing remedies for the violation of such a prohibition, and this is where he's pointing to, includes a false statement of fact or fraudulent medical theory that is likely to endanger the safety of public health. That's subjective. So when we say these injections aren't working and they say, well, there you go, that's a false statement of fact. And even though that's the truth, they just have claimed that's the case. You can be removed. You can be arrested. Now, going to the next one, this is the real important point here. Assembly Bill A416 relates to the removal of cases, contacts, and carriers of communicable diseases who are potentially dangerous to the public health. We already showed you this. Now, if and when this passes, it's going to be a really big deal. A suspected case or suspected carrier who is detained. So you can just by them saying you might have it. They don't even need to test you. You just get detained by the assumption. A person who is detained pursuant to subdivision 2 of this section as a contact of a suspected case shall now not continue to be detained. Let me make sure I didn't highlight that incorrectly. Pursuant to subdivision 2 of this section, as a contact of suspected case shall not continue to be detained after the determines that the, okay. So the point is that's right. The point is that you can be a contact of somebody suspected to be sick and they can detain you. But this is where they say that as long as they then test you and you're not, they can let you go, but you can be arrested just by being around somebody who doesn't, it's incredible. Nothing needs to be verified. After the department determines that the contact no longer presents the potential danger to the health of others. So that can be a test, or as it goes forward to point out, that it may be other things included. Have his or her medical condition and needs assessed and addressed on a regular basis. So this goes back to the idea of what we're talking about with the NHS and mental situations. But if they still think you are a potential threat to others, Even if you're not sick, they can say, well, he doesn't like masks. He talks about anti-vaccine stuff online. You're now a potential danger. And that's not hypothetical or hyperbolic to pretend that that's where it could go. More importantly, it says, in addition to the removal or detention orders referred to in subdivision 2 of this section, and without affecting or limiting any other authority, God forbid we should affect the authority of our other parts of the government that the commissioner may otherwise have, the governor or his or her delegee may, in his or her discretion, up to them, issue and seek enforcement of any other orders that he or she determines are necessary or appropriate to prevent dissemination or transmission of contagious diseases or other illnesses that may pose a threat to the public health, including, but not limited to, orders requiring any person or persons who are not in the custody of the department to be excluded, to remain isolated or quarantined, to require the testing or medical examination of persons, to require an individual who has been exposed to or infected by a contagious disease to complete an appropriate prescribed course of treatment, prevention, medication, or vaccination. Not your choice. That the government itself can make you take this injection if they believe you are sick in their custody. Here's a report from the Exdale Exposé pointing the same thing out, where they just make clear that I wanted to include for you the bill, which is called the New York State Assembly Bill 4A416, will apparently be voted on in the next legislative session on January 5th, 2022. So in 4 days, somebody please keep up on that and let me know when it passes. I'm pretty sure that it will. Now on that note, let me just grab one more. What it was, NYS. Yeah, I have them all right here, as you guys can see. Let's see which one of the other ones we didn't talk about today. Let's see what this one was. I went through all of these bills. There's a lot of these that are crazy. Permits any child who is at least 14 years of age to have administered to self or herself certain immunizations required by law. So this is the one where basically they allow a child at least 14 years of age to basically allow them to have to not, their parents don't matter anymore. You can give them a shot. All of this is coming down the pike right now. All of it. Based on the illusion that this, what we're talking about right now, is a threat. Now, here's the craziest part, specifically talking about A416. We just showed you what that is. Oh, what time can do, right? One year difference can make. Back in January 4th, New York is, quote, trying to pass a bill that would allow them to round up non-mask wearers and people who don't want to take the vaccine into concentration camps with their, and then with a court order, they can force vaccination. Okay. Well, first, what does that basically say? They're trying to pass a bill that would allow you to round up people that are a potential threat to public health. Well, that's non-maskers, that's people who don't take injections, same thing, and put them into concentration camps or quarantine. Then with a court order, they can force it. Well, they don't even need a court order. They just need to say you're sick. So apparently that is fake, because clearly they don't even need the court order. But what's crazy is this is what it said, and they said it was fake news back in January. Now it says, former police chief, concentration camps for having a virus, proposed New York bill would basically do just that. That's actually what mainstream is reporting. That's law enforcement today. New York bill threatens basic rights of citizens with forced COVID vaccinations, quarantine camps. Now, I'm not even framing quarantine camps. The point is that whether you frame it that way or not, that is literally what this bill describes. Putting you in quarantine without because they think you might be sick, forcing an injection if they think you're sick. This is what it says. And yet that's crazy, ridiculous fake news, to where they deleted accounts and censored people back because they knew it was happening and dared to report it before they were supposed to talk about it. That's where we are. And to finish off a really insulting situation, here is this absolute fool of a person, Scott Adams. Let me just give you the breakdown of his evolution and we'll show you the actual tweets. So he says, if you are unvaccinated, you are in the middle of a deadly pandemic. You are vaccinated. If you are unvaccinated, you are in the middle of a deadly pandemic. If you are vaccinated, it's Wednesday. That was what he was saying back then, right? So vaccine, you're safe, right? He was wrong. We said he was wrong. And we didn't just say because we guessed at it. We said, here's the peer-reviewed data that shows that he's wrong. Okay, so now Scott adapts and going forward, and now he finds himself in a position where all of the data is very clearly showing that's not true. Now he says, I'm the best predictor in the country. Yeah, real humble, right? And I don't see any way to be certain about the vaccinations. Oh, so now he starts rolling back, starts back treading a little bit, back paddling. But there was a lot of ways to see it. And we showed you those ways. We showed you the data that said this. We showed you the Israeli studies that did, that showed you this. We continually used the peer-reviewed data to show you that this was not happening. But apparently, he didn't see any way, so you're clearly not the best predictor. You're clearly a follower of people. But he says, you can't be certain you made the right vaccination choice and also believe in science. See, now he's trying to tread back, because up here he said, you made the right choice. You see, now he's going, you don't know, you don't know. That would be inconsistent. I believe in science. Well, no, that's a dumb thing to say. Nobody believes in science. You believe in the scientific method. But you see that he's part of the follow crowd. He says, 95% of you will disagree with me, insisting you made the rational decision. I know I didn't. Once you realize you didn't either, we can talk. Gets even worse. Note to people who are bad at critical thinking. If we someday learn that getting the vax was a huge mistake, come forward to today, please don't tell me how you knew all along. You are just guessing, just like the rest of us. Someone will guess right. Yeah, you know, you're not wrong. People who are guessing, some of them will guess right, except that's not what happens, Scott. All of us who were saying this and we're doing so with peer-reviewed data, we're showing you the research that suggested it was most likely not working. And people like me, for instance, didn't say, I know for sure it doesn't, because I'm not an idiot. People like you who said that in reverse. We know for sure it works, because that's what idiots do. You lie, you say things that you don't mean because your narrative. But even as you start to roll it back, you go, oh, but we don't know. And you didn't know. Nobody knew. Okay, let's scroll back. It seems like you knew right there, didn't it? You utter liar. But as he just drowns in his own misinformation, let's see. He goes on to say, when a subset of the common people get one right entirely by luck. I mean, God, man, this is so bad. This makes me feel bad for you, even though I shouldn't. Because this is bad. So you now know literally everybody everywhere that said what we said, and you know we guessed? That is guessing into an argument that makes it seem like you knew what you were talking about. Pathetic. As we are seeing with vaccination criticisms, they crown themselves as smarter than the experts. But actually, that's a case of being stupid twice. Wow. I actually really feel bad for this person right now, even though he's a terrible person. The funniest part of all the pandemic punditry is that our data was so bad, only the people who interpreted incorrectly made good predictions. God, I mean, it must make your back hurt to do so many mental gymnastics here. Clearly, we were using the data that made these cases, and that's why a lot of experts were saying this. As this person says, he knows he didn't make a rational decision. He then projects that nobody else did either. It was clear early that it was old and sick getting it hit hard. Letting the rest of us make a rational choice, just not scared of COVID, was enough for most people. Bad. Now, here is Martin Kuldroff, somebody who's been involved with all of this in the Great Barrington Declaration and so on. Here's what Scott's saying. We had 300 million different COVID opinions with no credible data to back up any of them. You are just grasping at straws. Millions of Americans will end up being right. But just, I mean, okay, I'll finish it. Entirely by chance, and they will crown themselves the common sense geniuses. That's guaranteed, not narrative. Now, this is somebody who's at a point where he got it really wrong. And we're finding ourselves in a position where it's obvious that some of the people that were screaming alongside him the whole time, going, you're wrong, here's the data, you're wrong, here's the data, are showing to be right, and he can't stand that. So he has to just be like, well, somebody's going to guess, right? Well, you can't make that argument unless you're pointing to some average person who has no background. What about people like Dr. Malone? What about people like Dr. James Lyons Weiler? What about Denny Rancourt? What about any number of endless string? Nick Hudson, Piers Robinson. I could go off a long list of people that have been screening this stuff from the beginning. Scott, they didn't guess. They were using peer-reviewed data, just like me. But you see, that's why he won't point to people like us, because he'll look like a fool. But here's what it says. After previously being described as a fringe epidemiologist, now the explanation is that the Great Barrington Declaration got it right entirely by chance. I mean, can we not see how ridiculous that is? I mean, it's bad. Finally, on the way out, last clip. COVID 1984. Dr. John Abrams, Abramson, a Harvard Medical School lecturer and national drug litigation expert, shares what goes on behind the scenes with Big Pharma. This is an excellent clip, by the way, and I'll probably just play this on the way out. It's just amazing how we know this. right? How the experts know this. Like, in fact, the expert, people like this that write these books and write that can cover this. This guy, in fact, quite literally knows this. And you'll see why in the clip, because he has the inside information. We have this and we know this stuff, and yet we still pretend like it's not happening because narrative, because people want to be right, because they want their political side to be right, because they don't want to admit that they were wrong. But the primary, there's a lot of different reasons why that could be the case. So we're going to finish today with this clip. Great clip that I recommend you find. I forgot about that. I'm going to find the full, want to find the full Joe Rogan clip here so I can flesh this out more. But listen to this on the way out, guys, and realize this is an expert who knows full well what Pfizer is capable of, what they have done and what they're currently doing, or any pharmaceutical company for that matter. They only care about profit. And if you don't know that by now, you're not listening, because they tell you that. And that means they don't care about your safety, or at the very least, your safety is secondary to their profit. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Primary function of the drug companies is to make money for their investors. And we've got to get over the illusion that they're somehow, their purpose is to serve our health. The purpose is to make money.
We've talked before about Pfizer, and that what was the one drug where they had the largest settlement ever, with the largest penalty ever?
It was like, Pfizer. It was Bextra, yeah. An arthritis drug.
And what did they do?
So I can't tell you. I know, but I can't tell you. I spent about 10 years, a little more than 10 years in litigation as an expert in the national drug cases. And when I served as an expert, I got to see all the documents. I did that in the case of Pfizer. Pfizer's behavior was, in my opinion, so outrageous that I picked up the phone and called the Department of Justice and said, I know a lot about this drug, but I can't tell you because I've signed a confidentiality agreement as an expert. So the Department of Justice and the FBI sent me a subpoena and said, you must come with your computer and tell us what they did wrong. And I did. 6 months later, I read in the newspaper that the Department of Justice had found the company had committed a felony, and they were dealt the largest fine in U.S. history, the largest criminal fine in U.S. history. So I know what happened, but I can't tell you.
You can't tell me because of the confidentiality agreement.
Yep.
Wow.
And it's even more serious, because the drug companies own the data from their clinical trials. The peer reviewers and the editors of the medical journals don't get to see the data. They have to take the word of the drug companies that they've presented the data accurately and reasonably completely. And you only get to see it in litigation, 5 years later.
So the data is only held by the pharmaceutical companies. They release their analysis of the data?
Correct.
And then the peer reviewers do everything based on the analysis of the data that was released by the pharmaceutical companies.
That's correct.
That's insane.
That's insane. And docs don't understand it. They don't understand that they're getting manipulated.